Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Tired of nicks, cuts, and bumps? It's time to ditch the blade. Nair, the award-winning number one hair removal brand, gives you silky, smooth skin in as little as 3 minutes. That's smooth that lasts for days longer than shaving. Easy to use, blade-free, dermatologist tested, and made for all skin types. Plus, discover our new sensational fragrances that turn hair removal into a whole vibe. Shave less, glow more. Find Nair at all major retailers.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins. Episode 256 coming at you here on a Sunday night. Last night of the Bulls documentary, The Last Dance. So in honor of the Red Team, we'll be reviewing Red Dawn today. 1984. I'm offended people had to ask us which one. I know we review a lot of bad movies, but that one is like bad on a level of
atrociously unwatchable bad.
It's a one. I gave that movie a 1 out of 100.
I hope the documentary ends with Michael Jordan just telling us to give him money.
Hey, I got a Patreon in bio, guys.
He just puts out his Venmo account.
If you've enjoyed my content the last 10 episodes and what I've done, I have a Patreon. Just feel free to contribute if you want more documentaries on my Hall of Fame career. We'll see
where we're... I would pay for a tier 2 of Patreon for Michael Jordan if he gave us like unedited Michael Jordan stories. I would definitely pay for that.
I think unedited Michael Jordan stories would be great. I think there's probably a lot in that footage that Michael Jordan would never let get out.
True.
And it's not like I don't think there's going to be clips of him, I don't know, doing something like awful on camera, but I think saying something awful is probably in there. There's probably a lot of comments that certainly were used a lot by even elementary school students in 1995 that you would not want broadcasted today.
No, that's for sure. Oh, but I would pay for that. I would also pay to see here like some of it's just gambling stories. Dude's gambled with like some of the most famous people in the world. I kind of want to hear more about that. Obviously to bad effect, but
I would just love it. Like, there's some like weird, just really random Michael Jordan and another celebrity gambling bet on just something really stupid.
Yeah, like him and Pauly Shore bet a Ferrari or something in like 1996.
Or even just the because if he was betting that security guy on like trying to get the coin closest to the wall or whatever they were doing, he had to be like, you know, he had to like run into Steven Tyler or something at some point. It's just like, okay, like, look. Yeah, we're gonna see how close we can get the scarf when you tie it to touch the ground.
And here, Steven Michael, Tyler's we're gonna play.
Like, what? That doesn't make any sense. It sounds like you're trying to riff on something, but can't really come up with anything off the top of your head. And then Jordan will be like, oh, "No, man, that's not what it sounds like at all. I just want to bet on this shit."
Here, Michael, we're gonna play a game called Highest Number. Whoever says the highest number wins. You go first. Oh, it sounds fun. He needs to gamble so bad he just plays.
Have you seen the list? Sorry to change topics, but Michael Jordan played baseball. Have you seen the list of discouraged or banned things from the new MLB season, apparently?
I mean, it's probably – yeah, okay, go ahead.
Spitting, sunflower seeds, tobacco, licking fingers, fighting, hitting inside, meeting inside, bat boys, high fives, fist bumps, fraternizing, showers, sauna and hydrotherapy, Ubers and Lyfts, subways, and leaving the hotel.
Why? You go to Quiznos? No.
Why are you playing? I want to see baseball. Don't get me wrong, but that's insane.
That's like a prison work shift. Not really like a sport.
One thing on there. Chewing gum. Everyone hammer the gum industry now. Mm. Chewing gum, not on there.
Yeah, just chewing gum. So
I'll buy 600 shares of Big League Chew.
So wait, is that for like a proposal on one of those like dumb ideas they have for like a temporary quarantine city?
The most recent proposed idea has actually come on Twitter via one of our coworkers, Marty Mush, a reliable baseball insider. Love our guy, Marty. And this is kind of what people have been saying. It's like Texas, Florida, and Arizona is where all the teams will play, and it'll start July 4th. Baseball has a rumor every day that it's going to be starting up soon. Every day there's a new baseball. It's kind of fascinating, actually.
I get it. If people want something to gamble on, if they need something to bet on, they just, you know, they need it. But I guarantee you, you start broadcasting these weird-ass proposed games with no fans, which we're not going to get away from that. So, you know, may not be the worst thing about it, but it just will not feel the same. Having some like tournament ass feeling for like, you know, the same things like 12-year-olds have where everyone shows up to the same ball field and camps out in their RVs in the parking lot. And they all compete for some dumbass trophy and then drive 7 hours home to, you know, wherever. I don't like it. It's not baseball, and I'm the arbiter on what is and what isn't baseball. So, boo to that. How does it sound any fun? Like, how, just like watching two teams play in a stadium with no people in it. This does not sound any fun.
I may as well just watch the show at that point, like a simulation of the show.
Yeah, it's part of it, and it's not just baseball. It's like anything else. It's like this is why this whole thing is like very discouraging too. Because I know people are like, okay, well, we could be getting sports back with no fans, and we are getting some with like German soccer and Korean baseball. But when you watch it, it's the same. It's like this doesn't feel like this is not sports. This is a strange facsimile. This is the NyQuil Jornin. It's kind of like it, but it's not really the good thing. It's like the weird thing. I want the thing, and I'll you know, it'll be a while to get back to it.
Yeah. Korean baseball. Out, didn't do it for me. Could not bring myself to give a fuck. I threw soccer on the background, but that's it really.
It felt good to watch, but I look again. I don't know. I don't know if it's because it just felt like I was watching a Twilight Zone sporting event or whatever. You know, but if they're gonna try baseball, maybe it's a different story. We got Mike Trout playing, you know, against the Diamondbacks and some game where they're all in like some Arizona stadium. That's actually the one I'm interested for. Like, why don't they just have them at high school fields? Love to see these major leaguers out here at just some weird ass high school field design where like the outfield is also the football field.
Yes.
So the center field fence is like 700 feet.
So the Raiders games is what you're saying, more or less. Actually, RIP to that field. Now it's just going to be a baseball stadium, I guess.
The Oakland Alameda County Coliseum.
Yeah.
new name every year. All right. Anything else? Any non-sports thoughts? Anything?
Watching Avatar, Trill. Have you ever watched it before?
Avatar? I don't think I have, man.
Let's clarify. The last Airbender, right?
Avatar, the last Airbender.
Yeah.
The Nickelodeon cartoon from 2005 to 2008 or whatever years it was by Dave Filoni, the same guy who did Clone Wars. It is so good, even better on rewatching now. And like I first watched this obviously as a kid with my brothers. We all loved it. But watching it now as an adult, I appreciate it even more. A lot of like the more adult themed jokes that maybe I didn't completely understand at the time.
Mm. I've heard a lot of good things on it. It's definitely something I've always wanted to go back and watch. And huge reason why everybody hated the Avatar movie. Last Airbender movie, not only because it was bad, but because the source material was so great.
Exactly. It's amazing, amazing source material and just one of the worst movies of all time. Like, independent of the source material, on its own, still so bad.
It's tough to do an animated movie and then make it live action. If it's like an acclaimed animated series, I mean, even not a claim. I mean, even if it's Dragon Ball Z, and then they tried to do what they tried to do there.
Justin Chadwick.
I don't even know if that was like a real movie, though. Like, I hold off on panning that because it just doesn't feel like it got the release to warrant. Like, it's not like Avatar, Last Airbender, the Shyamalan movie. That was real. Like, that was a real movie. They tried really hard on that one. So I feel like I can shit on it.
Dragon Ball Z feels like that movie was always supposed to be straight to DVD, and then at the last second, some guy was like, oh, no, let's release it in theaters, like the day before they decided to release. And then they put it out, and they're like, oh, fuck, you messed that up. Because it is also horribly bad.
I saw the movie in theaters.
Ew.
Last Airbender. That was...
Oh, Last Airbender. I thought you meant Dragon Ball Z. I'm like, where?
don't forget, that was Dev Patel's first role, I believe, since after Slumdog Millionaire. Talk about just going from the literal tops to the literal absolute bottom of a movie.
Like Oscar shit to like literally garbage. So like literally one of the worst, like highly regarded as like one of the worst movies of its respective decade, which is crazy.
Yeah, it was right after.
Yeah, bad. I don't know why I've seen that one, but not the actual good Avatar.
Yeah, watch the good one, asshole.
The whole series, it's a lot to commit to. And by the way,
it's three seasons, man. It's not that much.
I'm on my third rewatch of Tiger King. I can't get enough of Tiger King.
I've never muted your mic mid-show. I may do that. You're not in your third walkthrough of Tiger King.
Yeah, dude, I can't get enough of these crazy characters. I just think it's something.
Carol Baskin.
I think it's something that everybody's still just very interested in. And I'm thinking about doing a Tiger King podcast where we just
what are you going to call it?
We'll just say the name of the podcast is going to be, Hey, does anyone think Carol Baskin killed her husband?
Paper Tiger. Podcast. There you go. There's the title of your podcast.
The only thing, we're not going to have new information. It's going to be like 37-minute episodes, and it's going to start with like, you know, some like quirky xylophone song intro. Like, this is Paper Tiger on the Podcast Network.
Yeah, Tiger King. I'm so sick of it. I'm sure Jeff is even more.
That's Last Dance is something that people would have like regardless, Tiger King would not have been that big of a deal. Out of quarantine, I stand on that. I stand on that as my take. Whether you think it's right or wrong,
I just remember thinking back to like seeing pictures of signs that was like, you know, posted at like the church, you know, Southside Church, and it was like Carol Baskin not welcome. People share it on social media. It's like, oh, people at the church are watching Tiger King too. This show is huge.
What else? All right. If you want to check out, we did another one of our 5-on-5 fictional basketball debates. Three of us, KB and Nick, Coley and Tyler from Mixtape. It was a lot of fun. Some of the hardest I've ever laughed, two in a row. That's on our YouTube page.
Watch it just to see Coley get mad.
Coley gets mad.
Coley gets furious.
So we are tweaking the rules for our next one a little bit because I want to take out a little bit of like the arguing over like whose team should win, because I feel like there's the genuine just debate of the better team is almost as funny as opposed to being competition. But we're still going to have people suggesting teams, but that is not going to go away because that is very funny. And I don't know if anyone can beat the we've established at this point, if you've not watched them, the Serial Mascots team, the way we've talked them up, I don't know if they can be beat. Like, yeah. we've put them on this level where I don't know what we're going to do. So. We'll keep on doing those because they're
I
fun.
Think they can be. I think they can be beat because I'm just going to create a team that's a Serial Mascots team, but then replace the Crackle or whatever and dig them. Weakest links.
Smart point. Smart way to do it. So one more details on what we're going to do next there. Trivia, all that shit. We're taking on Ken Jack, Robbie Fox, and Joey Molinaro, one of the newer Barstool employees. Probably know if you have Twitter. Does impressions. Really good at him. The three of them are going to take on Alex Damon of Star Wars Explained and Star Wars Trivia on Tuesday. He's like if you combined the debate of MJ versus LeBron, and it was just one guy at Star Wars Trivia. So that's going to be a bloodbath, and it's going to be exhilarating. I cannot wait. He knows a ridiculous amount of Star Wars things. So that's going to be a fun little trivia thing you can check out on Tuesday night. So a lot of content throughout the weeks. Just keep that in mind. This episode brought to you in part, folks, by Roman. That's right. Nightly defense from Roman. This is not a Dom Cobb doing Inception dream defense. This is for dealing with acne, redness, dark spots, wrinkles. Yeah. You thought it was a dream remedy.
I thought it was like a weapon that you slept with.
What if Roman just dropped an ad read for like nightmare defense?
Just like every 22-year-old who moves into a new place by himself, just his old baseball bat, his old Louisville Slugger Omaha or TPX baseball bat under the bed. Nightly defense, baby.
Who decided to call it night defense and not castle? My opinion, folks.
Roman makes it convenient to get customized prescription skincare that really performs. Grab your phone, computer, tablet, sidekick.
Part of your routine.
Grab your skincare
regimen.
Grab your T-Mobile hip top. And complete a free online consultation, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. If appropriate, a doctor will prescribe a custom blended treatment based on your skin type and priorities. You'll receive your custom skincare treatment with free 2-day shipping. You also get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor if you need to make a change to your treatment or have any questions with Roman. There are no commitments, and you can cancel any time. Get to GetRoman.com/barstool offer for a free online visit and start your new skincare routine today. That's GetRoman.com/barstool offer. Eligibility requirements and additional terms apply. I don't know. You're going to be going outside now. You've been cooped up inside, sweat. I feel like there's a lot of skincare issues because of the changing quarantine rules and going into the heat after being inside for so long. So it makes sense. Roman Nightly Defense.
Ooh, I've been running outside safely and social distancing wise. And I mean, it's just made running seem fun to me. I can't wait to get out there. Like, I look forward to it every day that I've decided I'm going to run. That's my aside.
Good for you, man.
I've also done that thing where you get into something and done it 3 times, and then now you're looking at equipment.
Yes.
That's what I'm doing right now. I'm looking for a better pair of running shoes and some – done it 3 times.
Yep. That's usually what happens. You go bowling 1 time, the first time in 5 years, and you're like
– I should get my own ball.
I might just get a ball.
I want to get one of those balls that had the grips I could spin. And they get the spin and the curves in them, like the pros.
Globe inside it. It looks so cool.
Yeah.
Globe bowling ball guy is always the worst. I don't like the globe bowling ball guy.
I mean,
my family crest on the front of it.
It's really like golf. I mean, golf is great for a lot of different reasons, but the equipment side of golf is one of the underrated aspects of golf. It is probably the closest
thing. People actually sometimes use the word expensive as opposed to underrated.
I like it, man, because it's the closest thing to feeling like you're a video game, like Assassin's Creed Odyssey type character, just like trying to min-max your character and your equipment, getting the specs right, just equipping the right equipment. Feels great.
I was fortunate growing up. My dad worked in the golf business, so it didn't cost our family a fucking arm and a leg just to let me play golf, because golf is – very expensive sport. Expensive. Even though you can be good at golf without expensive tools.
I remember I have a friend growing up who plays a lot of hockey, and I remember like asking once, like, oh, how much does it cost for a hockey stick? And he's like, oh, like nothing crazy. It's like $500. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, hockey's expensive. Isn't hockey like expensive right behind golf in terms of
it's crazy how expensive the equipment is. It's absurd.
Yeah.
Like if you're like a goalie or something, you're basically spending like I don't know how much money, but a lot every year. Or every year that you replace your equipment.
Not just equipment, but I think hockey is one of the more expensive sports just from how much it costs to actually play.
And
the teams have to buy rink time and
exactly.
Stuff, travel and all that crap.
Imagine how many people out there would be amazing hockey players, but that barrier to entry will never get easier for them ever, especially not now.
No, I mean, certainly hockey is a very high barrier to entry. One of those things being how shitty the locker room smell.
Oh my god, and the equipment.
Oh.
that hockey bag Badissi smell, that back shot will never go away.
We have an interview with Patton Oswalt coming up this episode as well, so get ready for that.
I wonder if you watched the Blacklist season finale, because I saw clips from that.
It's it looks amazing. Awful. It's amazing. It's so good.
Well, true. You would remember. Do you remember the movie Scanner Darkly?
Yeah.
That's what it looks like. But a shittier version.
But way shittier. Yeah, I think the rotoscope stuff looks cool when they fully commit to it and they get a budget to do it. But this was actually like...
It looks like pre-render CGI, like when they're like, okay, this is what's kind of going to look like. You want to go with this, Mr. Director? And they're like, ah, no. And then you see it in like a special effects reel. That's what it looks like. Or in a, like a, what do you call it? A blooper reel. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it was like a Telltale game that they made for $32. You feel bad for them, right? Because, you know, somebody put a lot of effort into that.
But try to do something cool.
Yeah, they try to do something cool. But also, you know, my job here on the podcast is just to shit on stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry. I just have to do my job.
All right, what else? Anything? No, let's get into the news. Let's do news. First up, Scoob. All three of us watched Scoob. We will not be reviewing Scoob because we will be reviewing the Pete Davidson, Judd Apatow movie. But I'm not going to ask people to pay $20-$25 to watch Scoob. It's just not.
I didn't like Scoob.
I thought Scoob was okay.
Tell us what your review. Your review of Scoob is how I felt about it.
It didn't feel like Scooby-Doo. It was weird. It just I felt like, you know, I wanted the gang together, and Scooby and Shaggy were removed from the other three for a large part of the movie. I think like having the Captain Falcon and the other mutt, whatever, was
Dino Dog.
Dino Mutt
or something.
No, it was not Captain Falcon or whatever.
Blue Falcon.
Yeah. Captain Falcon's from Smash. F-Zero.
I thought it was a joke.
Smash Brothers. I didn't like that. I think Mark Wahlberg is one of the worst voice actors I've ever heard.
I liked him as a voice actor in it. I thought he was okay. I didn't even realize it was him for like a half an hour.
It sounds like Ryan Reynolds a little bit at first. It sounds exactly like Ryan Reynolds. And then you hear it when he does like the lower pitch voice. It's Mark Wahlberg.
I'm sorry if I spoil Scoob, but there's a scene in the movie where Simon Cowell shows up, and I just couldn't believe it in 2020, having a dedicated Simon Cowell cameo to carry the plot.
Twice.
It was just weird, man.
Movie long reference.
Mm-hmm.
It lasted you told us at first, you're like, Simon Cowell's in this movie. And I was shocked. And then it just lasted the whole movie.
Yeah.
I think it would have been funnier if it was Randy Jackson. Like, significantly funnier of a cameo.
What's up, dog?
That's a note for me, dog. I would have been much more pleased with that. But I watched it with a group, and there was kids present too. And watching it along with them, I think, was way better than watching it, I think, alone.
I can see kids liking it, but I put this on Twitter, and actually some people started – some people got mad at me for this. This is a genuine question. Who is this for? And some people said families, and, like, I can see that. It's definitely for kids. It's not fully for kids because there's a lot of references and a lot of moments that are definitely skewed to an older audience. Like, for sure. Yeah. Not even hidden things. Like, weird. There's like four or five scenes where like they very, like, very obviously try to get around swearing, and they kind of reference it. Like, it gets like kind of meta and self-referential at times too. But like the adult side of things, I don't really know. Like, again, Simon Cowell, and there's weird like Tinder references. The music selections are very odd.
What's up with the has anyone used a phone before? Like, anyone who watched this movie? Yeah, have they used apps before?
Oh, the app incredible. That's just music. Yeah, Shaggy's playlists are just apps. 60
my 70s 60, playlist app.
60 app, my 70 app. Okay.
Is this the same crew that did Emoji Movie?
It's a good question. It looks very similar, I think, like with the edge, like the way the rounded edges on everything looked. It's very possible.
If it's the same crew that had that wrote Emoji, that would make a lot of sense.
I think the problem with this movie or with Scoob is that it was a little it was all over the place. It was very, very hard to keep track of everything that was happening in the movie. But other than that, like, the gags, I think, were kind of funny at points.
It just didn't feel like Scooby-Doo.
And
I'm not a huge Scooby-Doo fan, but like when I think of Scooby-Doo, I'm thinking of a crazy adventure the gang all gets into, and they solve some dumbass mystery. And this was beamed up to a spaceship, and then they meet up with Captain Caveman. Okay.
As you said that, somebody tweeted us, I can't believe Scoob dropped it. And this is at Camp Stove. He said, I can't believe Scoob dropped a large adult son reference. Who is this movie for? Like, literally tweeted us at 1 minute ago. Someone tweeted that to us.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
He's like, I'm his large adult son. I completely forgot about that. You know, that's right. It's a lot of the adult jokes, I think, were very funny, but I think the kiddish side of it didn't work. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know how to put it, but I agree with you that like the general theme was sort of mixed. I don't think they did a good job incorporating it right.
It was just weird. It was weird. I don't hate it. It was weird. And then they you watch the credits, a lot of Hanna-Barbera universe. Adam Ant was in that shit. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Snark the Shark. I don't know what his name is.
But it still was fun to watch because it was new. I enjoyed and I like this over Trolls World Tour because I bought this for $25. These Trolls didn't give me that option. I could rent it for $20. And for this one, I think they're like, okay, we'll cut you a little slack. You can buy it if you want.
Yeah, at that point, for $4.99 more, just buy the movie.
Yeah. I watched with my kid. I mean, I watched it, part of it with my daughter before she lost interest and started throwing a ball against the wall. And she enjoyed it. And I think you're right, Ken Jack. I think when you watch these movies with kids and you just see that, like, they like stuff without even, you know, being jerks about it. They're just like, okay, it's a movie. It's kind of fun. This is good enough for me. It makes you think a little bit differently around some things.
Yeah.
Yep. I would agree. Moving on. Scarface reboot lands a director. Luca Guadagnino, I believe is how you say his name. He directed Call Me By Your Name. He will be directing the Scarface reboot.
Didn't Michael B. Jordan? I thought they were looking at Michael B. Jordan to do this.
I think there's rumors. I don't know if that's confirmed or not. And the Coen brothers are writing it, by the way, which is kind of an important.
Like the good ones or the Garfield Coen?
I'm not going to tell people. They have to look it up themselves. So they're scared while they do it.
My feeling on Scarface is I think Scarface has a lot of very, very historically important scenes, but not like really that great of a movie to tie it all together.
I agree with you there. I think that there's like a lot of movies, older movies that like really should never get touched and remade or anything like that. But I really don't think Scarface is one of them. Like, I don't look at Scarface where I'm like, that you can't touch that, you fucking asshole. How dare you? How dare you? Like, that's just not that type of movie to me. I think I agree with you. It's like a really good collection of good scenes, but it's never really been a movie where I'm like, this is a top tier film.
It's Scarface. You know, it's not like someone's like, we're remaking Goodfellas, which is so like, you know, I mean, even though Scarface is Brian De Palma's movie, but I don't, you know, if they remade it, I wouldn't be like, no, you got to have De Palma involved.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, because I really like Scarface. I'm kind of on the fence about it. Like, the fact that it's interesting people involved, I'm okay with it. Like, I'm not saying Michael Bay would do this, but if you go like that route, my opinion changes. Like, I like Scarface, but I'm okay with this because it's interesting enough. Like, you attach the Coen brothers, you attach a director who has had success. So he also did Suspiria, which I didn't love. But he put Michael B. I'm intrigued. I'm not going to like look the other way and say, hey, whatever. I'll watch it when I have to watch it, but I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, you know, because you could see this movie going a few different ways, but like the worst way would be some fucking just dumbed up studio dump that, you know, is very stupid, right? Like, and I don't know, you know, what is the point of Scarface? I mean, obviously get his downfall, but like it'd be something where it'd just be like overly like, I'm trying to think of like a good analogy for it. It'd be like they'd embrace the popular side of Scarface and miss the other side of it, where it's just like, we're going to make this a big event and we're going to take this guy. He's really cool and he has a bunch of money at some point in cars, and we're going to make that neat.
Yeah. I think the cooler part about it was the rise to power and all that with Scarface, like kind of getting behind more of that, more of like the character development, I think, and less of the craziness would probably make for a decent film. But maybe I think they can make whatever it is they're trying to make without having to attach Scarface to the name, right? Like if they just want to make a story about a fucking drug lord's rise to power, you can make that and not call it Scarface. And I don't think people would get fucking all up in arms saying they're trying to rip Scarface off.
Right. I wonder if this is going to be like the Call of Duty thing, right?
Where yeah,
like,
literally. Yeah.
Are you making Call of Duty or making a war movie just calling it Call of Duty? But I mean, there's not going to be plenty of nods with Scarface. Oh, I'm not going to say that's a directly comparable thing. That's kind of what you're saying, I feel like.
Scarface also is a very long movie. So I'm going to be, I think it was almost 3 hours. I don't know. I don't know if
I can't remember the last time I watched
this one. I don't think I've watched it since like 2004. Like it was one of the five movies I watched in college, like Boondock Saints, Scarface, Return of the King. And then, 2 years without watching a single movie, then Casino Royale and Spider-Man 3.
Smart. No Incredibles in 2004, you bastard.
I probably watched that too. I don't know. I watch more movies than that, but yeah, I don't know what, I don't know where to put Scarface. Cause I always think it's like, people love Scarface because I think the story is kind of like cool, or it's just someone's rise to power and, you know, loses it or defends it and goes out in a blaze of glory. But in terms of like having an emotional connection to it, I should think like a remake would be well received, depending on, like Jeff was saying, who's making it, who is actually playing Scarface.
Yeah.
Or Tony Montana.
Montana. Great or, future I don't song, know, maybe Tony Montana.
You maybe just have the scar. I mean, maybe all you need is a man with a scar on his face. You just completely change the plot.
Can we play Tony Montana by Future to end the pod? Great song. Fantastic track right there. Drake's on it, I believe.
Hannah Montana by Migos.
Why not both? Mix, play them both at the same time.
Next up, how about this? Mad Max Fury Road 5. Mad Max 5 confirmed to be a Furiosa prequel. However, it won't star Charlize Theron. This is apparently what the New York Times report, I believe it was George Miller made this comment. For the longest time, I thought we could just use CGI de-aging on Charlize, but I don't think we're nearly there yet. Despite the valiant attempts on The Irishman, I think there's still an uncanny valley. Everyone is on the verge of solving it, particularly Japanese video game designers, and there's still a pretty wide valley, I believe.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think I agree with that. Rather than have that be the whole movie and have some noticeable weird fucked up effect going on, like just recast. But it's not so tough because that's Charlize's character. We only got her for one movie, but it's kind of disappointing because maybe you'd want something else with her.
I think that they're eyeing Jodie Comer, I think is her name, right, from Killing Eve, who's a fantastic actress, by the way. I just never pronounced her last name right. But she's obviously won like a bunch of Grammys. God damn it, it's a long fucking day. She won a bunch of awards, and I think she's a very good actress. And if she were to play Furiosa, I think she could absolutely nail it. And I'm interested to see this. And as long as George Miller is still attached to it, I'm very much in. Did you guys see the video Charlize Theron posted of the first time she saw the war rig? It was fucking awesome. Like they had like the full truck like pull in with like the flames and shit and all the fucking stuff popping out of it. It looks so cool.
Do you think it'd be better to continue this story though than go back in time?
I know there's been
a lot of destruction, like a lot of things ended, like the world and where it was. But I feel like a continuation of who we had in the last one. I don't know.
I don't know because I think it's almost better to do a prequel just because I think like Mad Max is, I guess, very, very close to like a perfect movie, right? Like I think if they try to continue it, whatever they would do to it might reflect poorly on Mad Max. I think a prequel is better only because for some reason I feel like it's not that same effect, right? Like if you're continuing the story, I feel like there's just a higher chance for error than if you're preceding it.
I could go either way. I think the thing about I think prequels offer a very safe route to not fuck it up, like fuck something up that ended pretty good, which I thought Fury Road did with Furiosa's character. But to some extent, like I don't think it's necessarily a cop out, but it's like I think it's easier to come up with a origin story than it is to do a continuation of something.
Yeah, and even so though we saw this fail miserably with Star Wars, I feel very strongly about this though.
Well, but so I will defend one thing about like the prequels on Star Wars. If you compare the like overall story from the first or from the prequel trilogy to the sequel trilogy, I think the stories in the prequel was overall stronger. I just think the execution was very shitty.
That much is very, very, very true.
Because there was nothing in the sequel trilogy. Just because this is where do you take it? So that's a challenge I think you run into, like writing on Fury Road, right? Because then, you know, people are saying every time Max is off camera, people are going to be asking, "Where's Max? Where Max go? He's still around. He's still dicking around in this universe." Whereas in the prequel ones, I think there's more of an expectation. It's going to be its own thing.
Mm-hmm. That's a trap.
Yeah, so they're doing this. I mean, I kind of like the shot at Irishman. It's not a shot, but it's kind of interesting that insiders are even – because that movie was celebrated so much that it's like some people were like, let's not celebrate it too much.
Well, and he's right, though, because at the start of the last year, everyone was – I had the Irishman. He also had the Gemini Man is the big like, okay, like digital aging, digital de-aging technology. Guess what, folks? It's here. And it's going to be real great. You guys are going to love it. You can't wait till you see Gemini Man. and you can't wait till you see Irishman. You see him, and you're kind of like, I get why they did it, but it still didn't look right. And that's what George Miller, exactly. That's what he's right about. It's like it doesn't pass the part of your brain that you know throws up the flag whether something is weird and gives you the creepy crawlies. It's got that unnatural look to it.
Exactly. We're definitely right on that edge. We're almost there where it's believable for the brain, but I think like you said, Tro, we're right at that precipice where it still triggers that thing in your brain.
Yeah. And I don't know if you're like, it's still it gives you that feeling of someone with like an obvious mask, like a really good mask, mm-hmm. to a lesser extent.
Yeah. Obvious mask.
Like a bad yeah. grandpa, like or whatever, like Johnny Knoxville, like
yeah.
when he puts on the old person mask, and it's like a really good mask, but there's some fucking creepy about it. Like digital aging, de-aging is like that a little bit better than that. But you know, you got, hey audience, you know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. Thank you for that. I like the scene in Mad Max when he's going to take the shot and then she takes the shot. That mm-hmm. was a good scene. I like that.
Cool ass gun.
Yeah.
How about Ryan Gosling in space? That's a cool concept, right?
Yeah.
Never been done.
He's apparently going to be in a space-based movie with Phil Lord and Chris Miller behind the wheel here. This is from Screen Rant. It says, attachment comes exclusively from Variety. The MGM movie doesn't have any name yet, but we based on the upcoming book by Andy Weir. Weir wrote The Martian, which in 2015 was adapted into an award-winning film, obviously starring Matt Damon. Possibly going to be titled Project Hail Mary. I like this. I like anything with the tone. Gosling in comedy is a great duo. That is a thing that needs to happen more. Gosling, when he can be funny, is awesome. So I hope if it has the same vibe as The Martian, I'm all in.
What was the movie he did with Russell Crowe?
The Nice Guys.
Nice guys. Yeah, duh. That was great. Yeah, no, I'm down with that. I think that would be good for everybody. I'm just wondering if The Martian guy can follow up on it. Very interested to see what he does next.
The story is apparently about a lone astronaut on a spaceship who's tasked with saving the planet, which to me sounds very similar, obviously, to many, many stories and movies, but very like, recently to Ad Astra.
Earth?
Saving yeah, Earth? Saving Earth is saving the planet.
From up there.
As a lone astronaut. So it sounds very similar to me to Ad Astra. Mm. But I think that because it's Lord and Miller, they're going to be able to make this basically Ad Astra, except much easier for a mainstream audience to enjoy, because Lord and Miller are so great at that and so great at incorporating, you know, comedy into like a good and, you know, more digestible storyline. So I'm very excited.
What if they listened to our podcast a few episodes ago and all the comedic breaks are going to be Ryan Gosling pissing in space and then missing the vacuum, the piss vacuum, and the piss droplets flying all over, and he's got to go and collect piss droplets in a Ziploc bag, and that's like, you know, that's comedic break one, sandwiching very yes. intense and serious scenes.
Yakety Sax plays while he collects his own piss floating in the middle of the spaceship.
And the other one is he cranks off in space, and then he looks around, he can't find it.
Where did it go? And then it gets stuck in his hair like it's Something About Mary.
Yes, that happens 13 minutes into the movie, and that doesn't resolve itself until the very end of the movie, until you see where it went.
He needs something to patch up the spaceship before it blows up. And he's like, wait, I got this glob of cum in my hair. And then
you know, just floating through the spaceship. He's like, hallelujah. Come over here. Perfect. It's got like hairs attached to it.
Oh,
like Nickelodeon Gak after playing with it for 5 minutes.
Oh, no. maybe that's the gag he does. He tries to shave his own pubes in space. He's like, I've been in here a year. It's so fucking disgusting down there. I just need to try. And he's doing it like over a ShopRite bag. And like, it's just, he drops the bag and the pubes all get out.
The weird thing about something like this is talking about this movie. It's fun to talk about it. But like all these, this is so preliminary. You have to wonder what the schedule on just something getting started like this now is actually going to be. Mm-hmm. Because they could do the writing, like all the writing and casting, and they're figuring out ways to make it work. It's pretty much just the production. But you know, what do movies take like a year, 8-9 months to shoot? Less? Who knows? Maybe I should know this. I don't know when this would be coming out, Jeff. Do you?
No, I mean, I don't know either. I have no idea. All I know is that people fucking love the Martian book, and there's a lot of people who love the book who say them. I think we talked about this last time. We talked about this movie that people said that book was better than the movie. So. Probably high expectations all around for both projects.
I love the book. I read it on my honeymoon. I read it. Yeah, in Hawaii, on the I didn't go to the beach. I'm not a beach person, but I am a hotel pool person. Even though if the beach is right there, I do prefer the hotel pool.
People might get mad at you for that, but I think that's not a bad take.
I mean, I'll go down and walk on the beach, but spending all day on the beach, like, I like the hotel pool. I like the vibe of the hotel pool better.
I was telling you guys how I was power washing the patio yesterday. I am so burnt. It is horrible. And it only on the neck, because I did suntan lotion everywhere else. I just have the reddest neck in the world. It's horrible. And like, I thought I was like a pimple or something, because I touched my neck last night. I'm like, do I have an ingrown pimple on my neck? No, it's fucking ripe as a damn tomato.
I've been, because I pretty much shaved my head. I took a one to it. And I've been running, like I talked about early in the podcast, not to brag, but I've been getting a lot of sun on my head. So I was like rubbing it the other day, and I just doused myself in flakes.
Oh, like, no.
Dry, dead skin from the top of my head, which is just, I haven't seen as much sunlight as it's been used to.
Nothing like that Parmesan cheese shakedown of the dead sea flakes.
Yeah, I love a nice dandruff rub down. I wonder if Roman's got a product for me.
We actually don't have another ad. We just have one today. So we'll keep on chugging along here. Quick Star Wars news. People are talking about an Ahsoka series again. Didn't we talk about this like 3 months ago?
I feel like you're right.
Right? Like, so that's not new news. But how about this? Ken Jack, one of your favorite actors, cast in Mandalorian Season 2. Timothy Elephant.
Timothy Elephant. The best. The GOAT. Timothy Elephant rocks so much. And I'm so happy he's in this, because he is like one of the quintessential cowboy actors to me. Because not even just between Deadwood and Justified, he just has like that perfect outlaw look. And I would love him as like a bounty hunter or a criminal of some sort in this. But specifically as a bad guy. I want him to be against the Mandalorian in some respect. And I want to see his face. Great voice, but he has
make
such
him
a great
Dash
look.
Rendar.
Yeah, fucking make him. Yeah, I mean,
oh,
seriously.
Dude, Dash Rendar popped up. Oh,
Dash Rendar, Timothy Elephant would be fucking amazing.
Isn't he Australian in Clone Wars? Dash Rendar, I think.
He's not in. Dash Rendar is not canon.
He's in the fucking. He's in Clone Wars.
No.
Is it Kyle Katarn?
What?
Yeah, Dash Rendar is not technically canon, as far as I'm. As far as I know, Dash Rendar is not canon anymore.
More and more people are getting involved with this Mandalorian Season 2.
Oh, wait, no, I'm thinking of the guy. Who's the dude that wears, like, the turban thing? You know what I'm talking about? When they go through, like, the list or, like, the group of bounty hunters in Empire? He has a... Shoot, I don't remember his name.
I know what you're talking about. But, yeah, unfortunately, they have not... They've not made Rendar canon. He was first mentioned in the book, in a journal book about Solo. It's the only thing. He's in one reference in a thing called Solo, a Star Wars story, Tales from Vandor, which is it's like a children's book, which is just that's a shame. None of that game is canon. You could very easily make that canon. Bring it. God, he would be a great Dash Rendar. Just that, like, that vibe that Mr. Elephant has.
I like that vibe that Timothy Elephant has.
How about this?
He's effortless.
Do you know where he's from?
Timothy Elephant?
Where he was born?
Oh, Corellia. Hoboken.
It's Honolulu.
Really? What if he's a military brat?
Maybe. I would mean that kind of makes sense.
That's an early life section thing.
Yeah, let's find... he's one of those ones who just has a personal... Oh, no, yeah. He was born in Honolulu. His dad worked as vice president of... a production at Gallo Winery.
Oh, yeah, no. I didn't realize Gallo Winery had a big presence in Honolulu, but maybe that temperature there is conducive to growing some
fucking
vino.
Dengar.
Some vino.
It was Dengar. It was who I was thinking of.
He's a descendant of the Vanderbilt family of New York.
So he's like related to he's related to AC 360.
Dude, fucking the Vanderbilt Museum in Long Island, awful museum. Just gonna say it straight up. Don't go there. But the observatory, like, you ever go to like one of those like old school? What do they call them? Like the star rooms, where like you go in and they show you like all the constellations and shit.
I will say this: like both the Rockefellers and Vanderbilts. I mean, the name rules.
Yeah,
I feel like part of the success is because the names were so cool. Because like it's not like one of the great imperial industrial dynasties. It was named like the Furts.
Mm-hmm. The Furts.
The Toot family. So Vanderbilt, Rockefeller, and those are powerful names.
Yeah, it's very true.
Have you ever been to the Biltmore Estate in Asheville, North Carolina?
No.
No.
Can't say I have.
I haven't either, but I know a lot of people talk about it.
That's been
as it relates to the Vanderbilt family.
I do hear Asheville is an awesome city to visit. I hear it's very fun.
People say good things. I've heard good things about Asheville.
Imagine if you
got some good breweries there.
This is really stupid, so just bear with me. Imagine if you were like booking a bachelor party and your friend wanted Nashville, but you accidentally booked Asheville.
If you're in your 30s, that would be the best bachelor party ever because you'd just be down and chilling at some breweries. It'd be a chill one. But if you're in your 20s and you wanted a rage, you'd be very disappointed.
You get drunk and get kicked out of the Biltmore Estate.
Yeah.
Banned for life.
You piss in one of their 23 pools. You got 22 more, you fucking Vanderbilt fucks.
Let's move on to Netflix really quick. Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Emily Blunt, they have a superhero movie heading to Netflix called Ball and Chain.
This is Dwayne Johnson. I'm here to talk to you about Ball and Chain, but before I do that, let me get out a refreshing cold glass of Terramana tequila on ice. And nothing goes better with my Sunday cheat meal of 800 pancakes. You see, I got them right here. I'm going to push those to the side real quick.
Never eat them.
This is Terramana tequila. I know, I love The Rock.
Blunt is producing. Emily V. Gordon, script writer. She did half of – she's co-screenwriter on The Big Sick along with Kumail Nanjiani. They happen to be married to each other. It sounds – sounds fun. That sounds already like that'll be the biggest Netflix movie of all time.
Yeah,
right?
The Rock?
Yeah.
Emily Blunt. That's a great combo.
They must have had some chemistry. Not like, you know, creepy chemistry, but like chemistry filming the Disney movie. They must have been like, hey, we work really well together. You should leave to John Krasinski.
Them and Jim from The Office do wife swap with The Rock and Rock's wife. That'd be the worst way to find that out. But I think the best part about this is the Emily V. Gordon part and that she's adapting, because The Big Sick, I think, was so good at, like, you know, relationship building, like the humor and the ups and the downs. And hopefully they can sort of bring some of that, because this whole thing, the Ball and Chain cartoon, is about like it's a husband and wife that are arguing all the time and they have superpowers and the superpowers are dependent on each other. So I think that like that part, that aspect of relationship part, I think Emily V. Gordon is perfectly suited to write about that.
When does The Lovebirds come out? Oh, May 20th. That comes out next week. So we'll have to review that on Sunday. The new Kumail and Issa Rae movie. We'll have to review that next weekend. And lastly, Fred Willard sadly passed away.
Legend.
Major rip.
It just made you laugh by looking at him. Just funny, like a handsome man, but just looks funny. And not in a bad way. But, you know, there's certain people that are just like, they make you feel better when you look at them. And when they show up in something, like I wasn't a huge Modern Family guy, but like every now and then I'll turn it on. And when there are episodes where Fred Willard shows up, it makes the show like 80 times better.
He was just so like consistently funny across so many different genres, like subgenres of comedy, like totally different styles, right? Like he's in fucking Tim and Eric. He's in like, I Think You Should Leave, Tim Robinson. Like he's in traditional comedic movies and all that shit. But like across all of that, like decades and decades of different styles of comedy, still funny, no matter what he was in. Just like you said, Drew, just the funniest face and delivery. It's great. Yeah, I still love the, I don't think not many people enjoyed that skit from I Think You Should Leave, but that's still one of my favorite ones. Where he's playing like the pianist guy.
Oh yeah, I don't know what the official name for that thing is, but it's
Organ Joe, I think, or they call it New
Organ Joe. We by the way, we are interviewing. This is okay. So this is how I got to this point. Fred Willard does a lot of like fake commentary for ABC on The Bachelor and stuff. Or he did. Rest in peace. Another show on ABC is Holy Moly, the mini golf show. Mm-hmm. We have. We're apparently going to be interviewing Rob Riggle again, and he is involved with that show. I've decided I think we want to get Trill on the show.
You want to interview Rob Riggle?
I'm going to try to get Trill on Holy Moly.
Okay, I'm down.
The mini golf show, yeah.
Oh, you mean get him on Holy Moly? I thought you meant get him on to do the interview. I was like, I'll do either.
Oh, no, get him. Yeah, you can come on to do the interview, but I want to get Trill on the mini golf ABC show.
I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to have a – so I talked to you guys about like my CT scan, brought it up on the podcast. Apparently my like intestines are twisting into each other, so I had to get it surgically corrected. But nothing showed on the CT scan in terms of like gross or anything. So like that was good. But that would be my sob story.
And then they'll have to let you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They'll be like, look, Rob, okay, like my doo-doo was weird for 3 years because my celiac disease, my intestines were inflamed and then twisted around each other and I poo-poo weird. And he's like, damn, man, that's tough. I'm like, let me play mini golf, bro.
Make sure to mention the like Kobayashi line. I'm sure he would love that. Remember when he did like Kobayashi? That was awesome.
Hey, I want you to let you know that I know you don't write your material on the Fox NFL stuff. I'm not judging. I know, look, I understand getting a check. I know all about it. I know you don't write your own material and we're on the same level.
Can you give me Tessitore's number, please? Just please. I feel bad for him. Actually, we should tell him to give a shout out to Tess because he lost his show with a booger, which sucks.
He did. I mean, Joe Tessitore, one of the best in business, ESPN, had no idea what they were doing putting him in that spot. He is a college football guy. You don't take the atmosphere of college football and move that away from a guy who feeds off that. That's what made Tess so good. Very bizarre move on their part.
Is there anything that's more of a lock than Terry Bradshaw getting over easy eggs? Like, you know that dude gets 4 over easy eggs and then juices the eggs all over the rest of his meal. Sausage covered in eggs, hash browns covered in eggs.
People forget he has a fatty. We saw Failure to Launch, right? Was that the movie where you got to see his ass?
Like that. Well, yeah, he's donked up.
Yeah.
Fuck, what else did I have to say? I had something else to say about Holy Moly. Oh, Holy Moly is very funny because they'll bring these people on. They're like, yeah, I'm John Carson from whatever. And I play mini golf 4,000 times. I play like 8 times a month. And they go and they can't sink a fucking putt. Like, they look like they've never picked up a golf club in their life. It's one of the strangest stories, like with like the backstories. And there aren't that many sob stories either. But Ken Jack and I were fascinated by that show. Troy, you'll have to
watch this season. I really enjoyed your fake name being Johnny Carson.
John Carson? I didn't realize I did that. I was looking at John Willard, but that's just me because I have the Fred Willard thing pulled up.
Mini golf's fun for 2 holes and then you're like, what did I get myself into?
No, see, I like mini golf.
I love mini golf too, yeah.
It's a very like I'm in Florida sort of thing.
Yeah, that's about
you know, there's location, a, you're
I'm on
beach.
The Jersey Shore and I'm in between being at the beach and getting just shit canned later tonight. I'm gonna go play mini golf for half an hour.
They had a mini golf course behind the Taco Bell in my hometown, and we would just get Taco Bell and then go mini golfing. And it was honestly, like, I could do that every day.
Poop at the Taco Bell clubhouse or at the mini golf clubhouse.
Yeah. I mean, if that was a Taco Bell cantina, I would literally do that every single day for the rest of my life and be very satisfied.
All right, that's it. We talked to Patton Oswalt. Patton Oswalt's got a brand new comedy special coming out. We talked to him about that for, I don't know, 5 Two minutes, seconds. And then we talked about Star Wars for 25-30 minutes. So here's us talking to Patton Oswalt about Star Wars. It was a fucking blast.
We are joined now, very happily joined, by Patton Oswalt. How are you doing? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing well. Nice still-in-the-box action figures behind you, my friend.
Well, I mean...
very, very proud of you.
Oh, if you think we're going to talk about Star Wars during this, you are correct.
Oh, he just ran off to get some. Oh, shit.
Look at this one.
Is that a Lego Blockade Runner?
Yes. Kendrick is showing off the Blockade Runner right now. Yes.
Oh, it's like a 4-hour build earlier.
I think I want that set.
Oh, it's so cool. It comes off like the escape pods come off and everything. Oh, it's awesome. It's so much
what? Fun. Oh, hang on. I might be going on Amazon after this call. Holy crap.
It's so much fun. But yeah, we're going to talk more about Star Wars. Trust me.
Cool.
We'll talk Star Wars. But you have a new special coming to Netflix, May 19th.
Yes, May 19th. Got the new Netflix special, I Love Everything. We'll be dropping on that date. So,
what can we expect in this one? I read the little synopsis on Netflix, but I'd rather hear it from you.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a rearing up of the life force after how dark my last special was, mm-hmm. everything that I went through. You know, I fell in love again. I kind of crawled back into the light, I guess. So this is more of when you've been dying of thirst, a sip of water, you know, feels like an oasis. So this is just, it is a comedian celebrating being alive, even though he's turning 50 and the world's on fire. I'm just like defiantly trying to find joy in stuff.
It's obviously on Netflix. Like I said, I'm very excited for it. I've been a fan, not to blow too much smoke up your ass. I've been a fan for you, big fan of yours for a while. Back in the
hang
in
on,
the
a guy CD with a days. Wait, a guy with a wall full of action figures is a fan of mine. What?
I've seen you one time at a free concert back when I was either a freshman or a sophomore at Penn State.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Well, was I good? Was it fun? Was it?
Well, oh yeah, you were good. You did the George Lucas bit, and that's all. I mean, that was like he played the hits. That's I mean. That's
oh, good. Okay, hear. Good. Yeah. I'm glad. Oh my God.
Do you?
I mean, the pro bono content might not have been that good if it was
yeah, exactly.
College.
Oh, I'm just going to give him 30% energy today. Come on.
Do you prefer? And I've always been curious because I have been a stand-up fan for a long time, not just here, but many people. And I became a big fan of stand-up, different comedians through listening either. Buying iTunes albums or when Spotify became first popular back in the early 2010s. And now, like your special here, it's on Netflix. It's a different medium. Do you prefer like the feature way to listen or consume your stand-up on one or the other? Because obviously we've gone down more of a video route.
Yeah, I mean, there's a definite, for me, I'm of an older generation. There's that nostalgia of, I have an album out just like all my heroes when I would get their albums. So, and I still put out vinyl copies of my specials. And I put out some of my early specials were on CD, but we're living in a more pull it out of the air streaming world now. You know, it's 2020. So I don't think that the delivery medium it matters so much as the content. You could, you know, it ultimately matters on what have you put on that medium. There are streaming specials that are terrible. There are ones that are great. There's streaming movies that are, it just depends on what you're doing with the medium. So I just try to focus on, okay, the technology and the delivery system, that's not my department. My department is the creative, and I'll try to make the creative as best I can and trust that the medium will serve that.
Yeah,
I guess. So, you know, that's always been my aim.
It's just funny because I don't know if you have this problem, but I think anyone who listens who knows if you plug like a phone into your like a car or do like Apple CarPlay, it'll typically play like your latest iTunes. And for me, the only thing in my iTunes is old albums. And your album, which I forget the name, but it has like I want to say it's like a very colorful album. I think it was the one where you yelled at someone in the crowd for fucking up one of your jokes. It's like always the first thing that plays, no matter what.
That's Werewolves and Lollipops,
right? Right.
Which and that's all just one. Show I did like five shows. I'm like, we'll edit these together, and then that was the show, warts and all, that we decided that's the album right there. That's what I wanted to capture, what the live experience feels like, where some things are great and some things kind of go wrong, and I liked that got captured.
Is there ever like nerves in that when you're doing like a Netflix special or anything where like, oh, I really want to make sure I nail this one take? Because I remember I went to an Aziz taping of one of his live stand-up specials. Uh-huh. And there was like a lot of hecklers in the first one at MSG. And then they ended up using the second one. And and I was like, man, I really wish they used one I was in. So is there ever like fears about that, nailing that first take for a Netflix special?
Yeah. I mean, the first one, what you want is the first one to go really, really well so that then you can relax on the second one because you know that you have it in the can. So this one, I recorded it in North Carolina, and we really, the first one was really good. We nailed all the material. It wasn't as lively. And so then in between the first and second one, I had a shot of scotch, and then I just felt, because they're like, even if the second one goes terrible, you have a very solid first special. So knowing that, I was able to be looser and goof around. And this special is pretty much the second take. It's the second show, the 9 o'clock show, because it was just fantastic.
That's good to know.
We already said we're going to talk about Star Wars, so we just got to talk about
it. Yeah, let's jump in, man.
And this is a question that you must get asked more than anything else, and it's, the unscripted Parks filibuster moment, the fan script. How much do you get asked this in any given interview?
I mean, I usually get asked about it in every interview, especially pop culture interviews, because it's a thing that kind of went beyond, way beyond me and way beyond. I think I was almost like I was the delivery system for something that had been pinging and around in people's heads at the time, which is, well, if all of these things are being bought up and Marvel and DC seem to be trying to connect all these worlds, then will there then, because they have to keep generating product that people will keep coming back to. So once you get over the initial surprise of, oh my God, Iron Man is linked to Hulk, which is linked to Thor, which is again, all very exciting. But then will they start going in another 10 to 20 years? Will the next generation be like, okay, let's combine, you know, let's combine DC, Marvel, Star, whatever. Like, let's see how many things we can get into one and see what happens with that.
Yeah, they want the crossover. I think people, whenever they ask you that, they just want the soundbite. They want you to say and just admit that, like, oh no, I actually pre-wrote the entire thing. But I believe
I think that was rambled. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I had pre-written that thing, I'd be even more of a genius. That was like me in the moment not wanting to get fired off of Parks and Rec, and they didn't, you know, cut. So I went in. My panic mode is apparently doing a trivia dump of everything that's inside my skull.
You're defining our podcast more or
less. Yes, yeah. You learn something about yourself.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah. There's a show that came out recently. It's a Star Wars show. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called The Mandalorian.
Oh, boy.
And in that show, there is a lot of comedians in smaller roles. You know, Bill Burr, yeah. Sudeikis, Horatio Sanz, Brian Posehn, all these ones. Did you have like an urge or at all? Do you want to get onto this show?
Well, I mean, I'd love to get onto the show just because I think it's so well written. And I think it's the most exciting thing that's been done with the Star Wars universe in a long time. The fact that the plots hinge on the different cultural differences between, you know, these kind of throwaway races, Jawas, Ugnaughts, and they're giving them deep backgrounds and beliefs and ethos system, it, to me, is so fascinating and so fun to watch, that they're having, you know, this was the sequels depend on how well do you play in the toy box. So some of the sequels, they are great, and some of them, you know, they didn't really play with them all that well. And The Mandalorian, I think more, not since Empire did they go, okay, we're going to use this as a starting point and launch even deeper into this world. And I thought it was brilliant.
That's so true too, because with the, like, even the Ugnaughts, like the best characterization you get out of them is them screeching at Chewbacca or something. And now you have Nick Nolte voicing one, you know, giving this whole, like you said, like an ethos to them and a belief system, which is so cool.
But you also like understand that now, looking back on it, yeah, they were being mean to they disassembled C-3PO and they're yelling at Chewbacca, but they were also slaves and they were being tortured and they were being treated horribly, which then also makes you wonder about, was Cloud City the utopia that we thought it was, if that's how they were treating the people living in the underworld, you know what I mean? So like it just adds all these different layers to things. And I think that's great when you do that in science fiction.
It just makes you hate Lando. It's like, Lando, you're running this shit system.
Like, were you kind of a, or was it that thing of like, was that a version of the Ursula K. Le Guin story, Those Who Walk Away from Omelas, which, yes, we live in a paradise and it's the paradise only exists because there's a certain person that's being treated horribly that gives us this utopia. Are you willing to make that trade? You know what I mean? So it's almost like Those Who Walk Away from Bespin. Like, are you willing to live in this world where the Ugnaughts are being treated so horribly?
What? Pick a character. If you could pick a character, it could be any species, maybe something new, fresh. If you could play, would you even want to play an alien?
Yeah. I mean, especially now that with what the Mandalorian did, it makes me want to go back to the Cantina sequence and look at the other species and find out what their deal is. What is the Wolfman's deal? What is Walrus Head's deal? Or, you know, all those. Or was it Hammerhead?
Hammerhead, yeah.
Walrus Man or whatever, yeah. But what is their species? What do they do? What do they – I mean, they seem to be able to all hang out in a bar and drink, you know, despite whatever their differences are outside of it. You know, there's Jawas in that cantina. So why do they – just that kind of stuff to me is fascinating.
No droids, though. That. They really hate droids in that
cantina. Droids. And then and what happened in the past that makes people hate droids so much? Because, I mean, droids are basically just there to serve and be subservient. So why do they hate them? Was there an uprising? Was there some kind of, you know – and why shouldn't – clearly the droids in Star Wars feel loneliness and pain and fear, so they're sentient beings. So why are they being there? There's something to explore there. They kind of got into that a little bit with IG-88, or IG-11, which I thought was fascinating. You know, oh, that's just IG-88 was one of many models. You know,
yeah.
Forlom is just a C-3PO unit. It's a protocol droid that was reprogrammed as an assassin because it's the same body with a different head. So what was that story like?
we could get you as a bounty hunter, but I think you need to play my favorite. And if people listening are sick of me saying this, because I talk about this character all the time, it's Snaggletooth. It's the one where George got the toy from the box and saw it had moon boots and said no, and said, shrink that down, take the moon boots off. But now Dave Filoni in the Clone Wars series just brought the moon boots guy back. I think you got to be Snaggletooth moon boots. I mean, that just seems perfect.
Yeah. Or the who was the guy? There's just a flat out astronaut in the cantina.
Yeah.
The guy that tells him where Chewbacca is. So he's clearly just another smuggler, and it looks like he's using either Rebel Alliance clothing or Imperial clothing. So what happens? I mean, are there? There's got to be factions of both. Yes, there's Imperial traitors. There's also got to be Rebel traitors who are either working with the Empire or working kind of as in-betweens to make money off of themselves. There had to have been Rebel profiteers, and that would be a fascinating area to explore.
Well, that show dives into everything. I wanted to dive into music because we're fascinated by the music in Star Wars. Just the fact that
Dan and his little and the modal nodes. I mean, come on, they were being paid to be in that cantina. Did they go to different planets? Were they only on that planet? Like, where do they go work?
Just the fact that jazz in Star Wars is called jizz is the most fascinating thing probably about Star Wars.
That was one of those words that aged so horribly. Oh, George.
I mean, Ever Orbis and the Galactic Jizz Whalers. Did he know when they made that a band? Like, 20 years from now, that would age so terribly that you just can't really, you can't print it anywhere. Like, is it just going to get
laughed
at?
They should do a black and white Ferg and Dan movie where you find out that Ferg and Dan was like the son of some like conservative religious leader, but he wanted to go play jizz. The jizz. He rebels and then has to, but then it aged badly because he does it in like Jawa face. And now that's considered offensive.
Yes, he's a what do you call it, a Sith preacher's son, and he rebelled against his father.
He's a Sith preacher's son. Ooh, I like that.
One of your most famous stand-up bit routines or bits, I don't know what the proper terminology, we use bits so much, is the George Lucas thing, as you're talking about the prequels and all that. Yeah. Do you have, that was a while ago, that routine, your thing on that. Do you have since then, has your thoughts on the prequels evolved, and more importantly, do you have a favorite really stupid thing from the prequels? Because for me, it will always be Dex's Diner, the fucking the nostalgic period piece diner. And just, I have the toys behind it. I have the waitress and I have the Jawa. It fascinates me that he put that in Star Wars. So that's my favorite.
Mine is the, who's the character's name who's selling the death sticks? He literally has a name like...
Oh, Elon Sleazebagano.
Yeah, Elon.
His name is Sleazebagano. Like, what is his story? Was he just like, really? Do I got it? My name is Sleazebag. Like, I got to... was I just... I had no choice in this. And then also, in this world where, like, why are death sticks such a big deal? Or such a, death sticks, where there's just seems to be, criminality seems to be okay everywhere. Everyone's pretty much okay with it. So why is he have some big, or like what happens after young Obi-Wan does the mind thing on him? That
does he go,
I'm going to go home and rethink my life. Does he end up becoming some huge spiritual leader or some civil rights leader? But he keeps the name Sleazebagano.
Became Tony Robbins. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, thank the heavens for Sleazebagano for bringing the, finally bringing droid freedom. Thank you, Sleazebagano. Like,
hello. I'm Sleazebagano. Welcome to my TED talk.
Well, it's like, think about the Clone Wars recently. They talked about the Jedi being a little out of touch. Like, how out of touch is Obi-Wan to think that he can just wave off and he's good? Like, that guy drops a resume on the table. This is Sleazebagano. No one's going to hire
him. Yeah, exactly. How long does that last? Do you either come out of it or you permanently change? Yeah. Like, is he nice for a couple of days and then he goes back to being an asshole? So he starts being nice to people and then he just has to burn it all to the ground. Well, thanks, Obi-Wan. What if it actually creates something even worse by doing that?
The butterfly effect of the Jedi is something that is not explored nearly enough.
No, it is not. No, it is not. And can a Jedi when he's feeling, he or she is feeling truly horrible, can they look in the mirror and do the mind thing on themselves, like get themselves going in the morning? Like, is that their cup of coffee? If you're feeling truly horrible, can you re-energize yourself using the mind trick?
That's actually like really fascinating. Self-hypnosis to themselves almost? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Spending if meditation is supposed to change the neural pathways in your head, then think of what the Jedi mind trick can do to yourself. Or is it like where you can't tickle yourself? I don't know, but that'd be a really interesting thing to do.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it is like that's how Mace Windu describes it. It's like you can't tickle yourself. You can't play mind tricks.
Or are Jedis, when they're together, before they go into battle, they're like, hey, do the mind trick on me and make me completely fearless, like before I go into the can they each give themselves a bump? Is that their way of giving themselves a bump?
Well, you talked about maybe wanting to get the same Lego that Ken Jack has. I do have Elon Sleaze Begano, and it comes with the bar and Death Sticks toy. So you can buy, you can get that. You can get the diner, the Jawa juice. Yeah. Yeah. All I want to do, I just want to go to the new Star Wars World at Disney so I can order the Jawa juice. Just say it. I just want to say it out loud.
God. Well, you know, my wife was the voice of Barriss Offee in the Clone Wars and
that's awesome.
Rebels.
But
that was a really interesting idea that I wish they would explore more, because Barriss Offee is a Jedi who is actually too hardcore to the point where the other Jedis are like, hey, you need to calm this down. She goes, no, we need to go further with our stuff. You're like, it's almost like she's too much of a believer and it's the way some super radical leftists and then super conservatives kind of meet on the other end of the spectrum.
Horseshoe effect, right?
Yeah. So that would be a really interesting, where the enemy of the movie is not a Sith, it's a radical Jedi. That would be a really cool thing to explore.
She almost was like a terrorist, right? Like she bombed the Jedi temple, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. But in her mind, because I'm doing good, I'm trying to wake these people up. And they're like, no, you can't kill people. You know, so that kind of thing is really interesting.
So I assume that this would probably be a yes, but with like Taika Waititi just officially signed on to do a Star Wars movie yesterday, which is amazing. I assume that you're in agreement with us. Like, I want to see Star Wars go weird. Like, I just
want to let visionary directors play in that world. Look what Favreau did. With not just with The Mandalorian, but with his choice of directors for the episodes, just going to these really interesting places, and his choice of writers, let people play in that universe. And I don't understand the demand for Star Wars fans, who you'd think at their base they'd be into Star Wars because of the endless possibilities for surprise and innovation. And yet they go into especially the sequels, especially all the hatred for The Last Jedi. I don't understand I openly stated these eight things I wanted to see, and those eight things weren't given to me. So I'm like, why would you want to go into anything, a movie, a piece of music, with just check off these boxes and I'll be happy? Do not surprise me. Like that idea at the end of The Last Jedi, where not even the Jedi themselves know where the Force will fall next, who will have it, that makes it so much more fascinating. And it was such a great rewrite of the midichlorians, and then they just abandoned that. Like, oh God, come on.
You're talking to two fans of The Last Jedi, so you're not really saying anything like too crazy to us.
Also, it was hilarious because I got to go to the premiere and where we watched it in the shrine. So the scene, I'm sure you guys.
I was actually there too. That's my little humble brag.
Then I bet you were one of the people that, because there's a moment, there's a visual reference to Hardware Wars. And in the shrine auditorium, like five nerds, including me, you can hear this little like, like in the five people that got it. And I almost think like you were one of them, but they were all like separated. But the rest of the audience is like, what's this? It's just ironing clothes. But the rest of us were like, because that was those Hardware Wars.
And I will say, and I actually kind of want to elaborate on that, because you were there. This has always been strange to me, because I was blown away when I left. I'm like, everyone's going to love this. And I was the reception at premieres and stuff is always obviously more positive. But there was – that was like – and like Ken Jack's been to like a lot of screeners. Like we've been to screeners too. And we go like Disney screeners where they probably – pump in like gas to make you like love everything anyway. Yeah. But I left that like that was electric. Every moment was like fucking insanity, and everyone loved it when we left. And then it was just so different 2 days later, 2 or 3 days later.
I don't know what, honestly, this is my, every now and then you'll go see something and you'll walk out and either, I've gone to things where I'm like, well, that was a piece of crap. Oh my God. And then the next thing you know, it's massive. Or you go see something that you think is genius and either people hate it or it just vanishes. And that's one of those cases where I'm like, I do not understand what this reaction is right now. I don't know where it's coming from. Is this an astroturfed reaction? Is this bots? Is this real? Because The Last Jedi was the best of the new three sequels, flat out, you know, and really set up the franchise going in some really cool places, you know. And then the fan outcry made them, I don't know what happened. I don't get it. I'm still confused.
I think my moment for that was definitely Blade Runner 2049. When I left that movie, and I'm like, this movie is going to make $1 billion easily. And it barely scratched, I think, like 150 or something.
It happens, man. You don't get it. There's a really early movie that Dave Foley starred in, a comedy called The Wrong Guy, came out in the mid 90s. It's Dave Higgins and, oh God, what is her name? Why am I blanking? Anyway. It's such a funny comedy, and I saw a really early screening of it. It was just nonstop. Everybody, I'm like, this is so well written. Meg Tilly's in it. And then it came out and just nothing. And I guess it has kind of a cult following today, but it's one of those things where I'm like, is my sense of humor just not everyone else's? Or I don't know what's going on, but it was, you know, it just happens. I don't get, you know.
Well, you have an old thing, and I'll reference another one, your older sets that was released, where you talked about making movies and how difficult it is. And you referenced, I think it was Deathbed, The Bed That Eats People. That was like one of the ones you referenced. That was a couple years back. It's got to be even worse nowadays, especially with how big movies are, like these blockbusters. And we love fucking Marvel, Star Wars, but we know that dominates the market.
Exactly. So it's very, very hard for any other product to get a foothold out there. And it's too bad, because that was part of the fun of movies, was discovering. So, you know, The Terminator was some low budget genre flick, robot killing from the future. And it just, but word of mouth gets out there. I mean, sometimes it still happens with stuff on, weirdly enough, there's a channel called Shudder that has
become. Oh, we love Shudder. Yeah.
They were a sponsor of ours at one point. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've become, I think out of necessity, this kind of brilliant showcase for new and upcoming horror movies that just cannot get distribution that are brilliant. So they have stuff on their channel now. There's one I just saw called Terrified, or Aterrados. I believe it's a Spanish language film that's genuinely just flat out terrifying and like well-made. Oh, I've seen enough horror movies. I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. This is, and another one called Tigers Not Afraid, and another one called Bliss. Like they're just, it's becoming this, oh, I'm glad I have Shudder because I can see new movies every week that are genuinely great that would never be shown anywhere else. I don't even think some of these get DVD releases.
It's like you said, just like the ability to just have that innovation, I think definitely helps. We need to step off Star Wars, because if you only talk Star Wars, our fans are going to kill us. Something else I want to talk about, King of Queens, one of your favorite roles of mine personally. Mm. Something I always wondered, did you ever try to parlay your friendship with Kevin James into being part of the Happy Madison Vacation crew?
I don't want to bum rush myself in anywhere where I like to be invited places. And I know all those guys. I love all those guys. Oh, just Kevin and Adam and Chris Rock, Nick Swartz, and that whole crew. I love them, but you have to be asked. And I was lucky enough to get to work with Kevin James for 9 seasons. He is one of the best comedic actors out there. He reminds me of the way that Jackie Gleason was so kind of this big dude, but he could be so delicate and kind of almost ballet-like in his movements. He could just like, he's one of those guys that on TV makes the TV screen feel like a movie screen, because the energy is incredible. So yeah, I'm not just gonna be like, hey, tell Adam to put me in the movie, you know, but obviously, yeah, that would be great. But Kevin, you know, got in, so I'm not going to go, yeah, I'm going to tag along with you. That's just, I don't want to do that.
Next time he goes to Hawaii, just tag along.
Yeah, exactly.
Next time, so you already won a Grammy, you already won an Emmy. Do you have any aspiration for the EGOT?
I didn't have any aspirations for Emmys or Grammys. So that happens, it happens. But I'm not going to like, I don't have like a blank shelf somewhere going, I've got to fill these in. I just want to keep doing, I mean, all the stuff that I've ever won awards for was stuff that I did because I really was excited about it and enjoyed doing it. And I was never thinking like, I'll do this and it will lead to this thing. You have to enjoy the thing that you're doing or you're going to get to the end of your career and go, I did so much unenjoyable stuff for these esoteric awards and I have no cool memories or cool stories to look back on. And it was a life just kind of burned away from fear and want. And that just, that's no way to run a career.
Still, I think your mind is smart enough to make a Star Wars fan fiction play that'll end up winning a Tony someday.
That was a setup for you just to pitch that to you, yes.
Well, you know, there's, again, I keep hearing about all of these other Star Wars properties that people had pitched that never went anywhere. Like, I've heard that Guillermo del Toro wanted to do a Godfather-style film or TV series about the rise of Jabba the Hutt and how he rose from this kind of pathetic slug to running all of the Tatooine crime networks and how he fought and thought his way to the top of that. That, I mean, and also think of Guillermo del Toro's sense of design and sets and production and art design. My God. I mean, it would just be every week. It would be gorgeous.
We deserve to see Jabba moving, not as a special edition New Hope version. Like, and like we deserve to see it like a live action job. I just want to see him move like in 2020.
Well, what if the Hutts, are a family, not a race, right? They're not a species. It's like a family.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a family.
They have a species name.
Hutties, I think, or no, that's not it. Cause I know they have like the Zero language. The Hutt and all them. Yeah.
I think I just feel like in that species, becoming fat and immobile is a sign of status. It's not him being embarrassed. It's the very, very few of that species ever gets to a point of power where they no longer need to be able to crawl away because they know that they're protected. And I think that that is a sign of status that I am finally immobile and people have to come and wash me and bring me stuff. Honestly, I think that, again, you know how they were exploring all the different species and their cultures? I think within that species, that is a cultural thing. It's a sign of royalty that I'm that fat.
Yeah, it's like in the Middle Ages when you were fat and pale, it's like a sign that you're super rich, exactly. Right?
I'm fat and pale. I don't have to go out and work in the fields, and I can just eat, you know, all this huge food. And it made you desirable. Like, I think within the world of his species, he is looked at as the top sex symbol. Like, he's their Brad Pitt because of, like, look how big he was able to get. Like, he is a desirable mate.
30 times sexiest hot.
Look how wet this slug is. He's so hot.
Yeah, exactly. Look how massive he is. Look at the size of that bed he has to lie on.
So the last thing we have to ask this to anybody who's ever worked with Tom Cruise, and you worked with Tom Cruise on Magnolia. Tom Cruise's ass, fake or real?
Tom Cruise what?
Was his ass fake or is his ass real? Because there is the famous picture from Valkyrie where his ass is huge, way too plump to be real.
Have you seen it?
No, I don't. I've seen the movie Valkyrie twice. Here, I love that movie. Let me see the picture.
Can you screen share it? Because it is, I think.
Here, I'll hold it up to the camera.
Yeah, let me see.
Because this, we have to get a definitive answer.
I mean, that could be a function of that uniform, though, the way it's, I don't know. I mean, I've worked with him on Magnolia. I've done a couple other projects with him, like table read wise. You know, I mean, we're not friends, but we know each other. I never really stopped to look at his ass. I don't know.
That's usually the response we get, by the way. They're like, I haven't looked.
Yeah, honestly, I don't stop and look at people's asses to see, you know what I mean? I mean, I was just in line.
That's for the best, yeah.
I was in line at a Vanity Fair event with Kim Kardashian for an hour, and I wasn't looking at her ass, even though I'd heard, you know, legendary things about it. It's like, I'm not going to stare at someone. It just feels weird.
It's for the best, yeah.
But now you're going to look next time you see Tom Cruise. We've already planted that scene.
Now, thanks, guys. Thanks for putting that in my head. You just inceptioned me, and I'm going to stare his ass next time. Oh, my God.
I don't apologize one bit, but then you have to report back and tell us.
Okay, I will. Oh, my God. Now I'm terrified. Now I'm so paranoid if I see him again in a flashback to this interview. Oh, my God.
Thanks a ton for joining us. I mean, we could keep you for an hour. I could talk Marvel, so.
So it's awesome, man. Are you looking forward to the next season of The Mandalorian? Obviously.
We just watched the behind the scenes. I just watched the first episode behind the scenes yesterday.
They just released that?
Yeah, first episode where it was with the directors, and I want to, and you probably know better than me and Kendrick, you might, Rick Famuyiwa, is how do you say his name? One of the directors. He did the one with Bill Burr in it where it kind of got horror-y.
Yes.
And Favreau joked, because I remember everyone said, like, whoa, that was so weird for Star Wars. And Favreau joked, he said, when we turned these into Disney, they were like, that's a weird one. And it's just so perfect that he allowed, like, to have, like, a horror kind of Star Wars thing.
Yeah, like in that one, The Mandalorian, they treat him like the monster and alien, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's alien. But also, what I love about that is classic gunslinger, low-budget filmmaking where they're like, we've got one hallway. How do we use this one hallway? And they made it work. That is classic low-budge exploitation drive-in movie making. Make it look great, and it looks great.
It felt so expansive. It felt like a huge ship, and then you can very clearly, like you're saying, using just that one little set.
And they made it work. I mean, look, that's why the movie Alien is so amazing, because the alien suit looked so ridiculous. And I'm sure you've seen the early camera tests where they're like, we cannot shoot this thing because everyone's going to be laughing at them. So then they go, let's put them in the dark and have them. And it made the movie so much better.
It's like the early Predator with Jean-Claude Van Damme. You ever see like that where he's in the red suit?
Yes!
And those are so funny.
They squeaked the production through just in time, too, because all of our Marvel Disney Plus things are all going to be delayed now. And luckily, Mando, they just got it through in time.
Yes!
Just got
all
it
right, through. Well, guys, stay safe, stay sequestered, and we'll talk to you soon.
If you ever want to talk Star Wars, we will talk Star Wars forever. For hours.
I'm happy to come back on after The Mandalorian airs, and we can go over episodes. I'm happy to do that.
We will hold you to that. We will hold you to that.
Yeah, just call my guy. We'll totally do that. We'll argue back and forth. I love it.
Oh, it's amazing. Awesome. Though it seems like we may agree a lot, but May 19th.
The best stuff comes from the arguments.
That's true. Yes. That's true.
Right.
May 19th on Netflix. I Love Everything. Pat Oswalt, we will definitely talk to you soon. Thank you so much, man.
Good. Thanks, guys.
The best part of the interview, Trill, because you obviously haven't heard it yet, is when I said, yeah, I've been a big fan of yours, and he had already commented on all the Star Wars action figures behind me, and he goes, wait, you're telling me the guy with the action figures still in the box is a big fan of me? He was great. He was a blast, and I'm going to hold him to it. He quote-tweeted us after the interview where I said that he was going to join us for Mandalorian thing, so he said he's going to join us for Mando breakdowns. So.
Hey, excited. I've always thought that his filibuster in Parks and Recreation was one of the funnier Star Wars related pieces of comedy done in the last, however, since Star Wars been created, I guess.
It's so good.
So yeah, thanks to him on that. We have some more interviews coming up soon. We got Thomas Lennon.
Love Thomas Lennon.
Yeah, he was very funny.
Oh, that Thomas Lennon.
My dad was in the Beatles.
My brother never let me play. Kicked me out of the band.
Well, so who else we interviewed?
John, Paul, Ringo, George, and Tom. And Pete.
Isn't his son named Tom?
What's that?
I think his son's name is Thomas, right? Or am I going crazy?
It's Julian and Julian and Sean Lennon.
Sean is what I remember.
The fact that I know that bullshit.
Some other interviews we have on the horizon, I keep forgetting. We have Rob Riggle coming up. We have, we're just talking to Clark Gregg.
Hello, yeah, Rob Riggle.
Huge one.
We do have a really cool one in 2 weeks. Yeah, we do.
It's big. It's me, Ringo. Big interview.
I'm only going to talk to Clark Gregg for 30 minutes about New Adventures of Old Christine. Not a bad show.
Clark Gregg, how's it feel like to make your hair slightly longer when they go back in time?
They just didn't know what to do with any of those Seinfeld cast members for a while until they figured it out with Veep.
And Michael Richards.
Michael Richards kind of did himself in, guys. I don't know if you've watched it before, but at the Laugh Factory in 2005.
So we are reviewing, thinking of going back in time, we're reviewing Red Dawn today. Let's get a little more excitement in the chat.
I just, yay.
I love Red Dawn. I'm excited to talk about it.
I like it. The thing about watching it is, I was watching it and I'm like, you know, it kind of sucks because obviously the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 part where they invade the U.S. was based off of Red Dawn, but I can't stop thinking about it right now. I just want to play Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
I like my literal comparison for this movie. It's like watching someone do a playthrough of a video game on easy mode.
But like, that's so comforting to me. It's like, it's such legit comfort food of this movie. I love it so much.
Because if this had actually happened, you would get smoked right away.
Exactly. They'd be so fucking dead. It's a bunch of teenagers. But so, all right, we may as well just actually review it. But so my rating for this, I give it an 84 out of 100. And I think I'm giving an 84 specifically for 1984. Just it's as high as I can go for it. But I think it works really well for a couple of reasons. And the first is that I think all of the Wolverines are really cool. You know, like Swayze, Jennifer Grey, Charlie Sheen, Leah Thompson, all of them are fucking cool and they're badass. And they just like have the look. And I don't think this is a correct job by the director. I forget the name offhand, but like they didn't try to make any of them do any legit acting other than Patrick Swayze, which is smart because he was the only good actor out of that grouping at the time. And his character, Jed Eckert, I think is like surprisingly rich because he's trying to be like the good older brother, the good leader, and also like the good person. And you see him like struggling with all that. Plus like the fact that like, he's still sort of a kid throughout the movie. And I think they do a good job of like developing him throughout it. And the second thing that makes makes the movie work is that the production value is really good. Like the equipment and the uniforms and the guns, everything looks legit. They're firing blanks. It's no fucking weird flash bullshit. Like, and they have these cool sweeping like landscape shots of like the Rockies and all that. And I think that is what helps take it, at least for me, from like a shitty B movie territory to like something at least a little bit past that. And lastly, I think the dramatic points hit, like the Harry Dean Stanton dad scene at the fence is so good. I don't care if you don't like the movie, whatever. That scene is still like makes me want to tear up. That is good. I think killing Daryl and the aftermath, like when they find out he was, like betrayed them, had the tracker and all that. I think that still works. I think Robert finding out his dad is dead is awesome. And I don't think they tried too hard in the dramatic moments to be something other than what it was, which is perfect. And like I said, it's basically like playing a video game in easy mode. It's comfort food. And I think that works perfectly to its advantage. And I think that's what makes it just a legit movie.
All right. So 84, big score. What about you, Trill? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm more 60. I enjoyed it. I've never loved Red Dawn. I think that in terms of like what I like about it is I always like a good like World War III scenario to get you thinking. And I think this one's like pretty interesting. I mean, it obviously sets up the geopolitical landscape with some nice yellow letter over black background at the start, mm-hmm. which is very abbreviated and gets you right into the action. But as an action movie, I think it's just okay. I think it's fine. And where I'm like, you know, where I take it when I think about it is like, you know, I was born in 1984. This came out in 1984. And, you know, I didn't really like ever consciously remember any of like the Cold War. I don't know if you call it hysteria, but any of the Cold War, what's the right word I'm trying to look for?
Hysteria, like, I think you're
maybe hysteria. Like what the Cold War did to people's mentalities and what they maybe did to their choices in like media and consuming pop culture. Because this feels like a very this feels like a fragment of like the end of the Cold War and that period, and like the, you know, obviously the scenario with the invasion is probably something that, you know, would never happen, but at the end of the day, I think the story it told was kind of like a fearful one, but yet like also like, you know, teenagers got some guns and kicked ass, so who knows.
Exactly.
It was interesting. I mean, it's a very interesting movie, and you can definitely understand where what you like about this one, how easily a lot of that can be ripped out in a remake. Because I didn't see the remake, but I think this is something that just it's something where you got to grade it on a curve for the '80s because it feels so of the time just due to being up the background of like just existing in 1984. So I don't know.
In like its own sense, it's a little propaganda-y, right? Like, because it's all just about Americans kicking everyone's ass all the time. And like, that's just, again, product, like you said, true product of the '80s and all that too. But I still think, well, you brush part of that aside, it still works really well.
I was reading about it, like, cause I was diving into it because it, you know, so the Pentagon, I think, like withdrew their support for this movie. You know, again, because sometimes the you know, Army or Navy will get involved in the making of a movie because a lot of that stuff will serve as a promotion device or whatever. Won't go too deep into that, but I do think there was like a little bit of debate on kind of like the reviewer side or the reaction side of things, where some people thought it was like, you know, very, I don't know. It has a very libertarian message, I think. just in terms of like non-reliance on the state.
There's a lot of retroactive critic reviews, and it's mostly about politics, about politics and Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, I don't remember enough about that era to comment on it. But like when I see something that like is like right there, where it's just a bunch of people kind of surviving like the way they were surviving without like, because essentially like, you know, the reaction was especially when they ran into what was his
character's
name? Yeah, kind of just saying like, you know, DC was bombed out and all that stuff. That like there wasn't much, I don't think, of a state apparatus to help them at that point. So kind of was just a message of survival on your own, right? It's kind of funny to think about a Patrick Swayze movie like being hotly debated in think pieces in years past.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple moments in this movie where he looks like Harrison Ford, by the way.
He looks great. He is so hot in this movie. It's unreal. Everyone in this movie is hot, to be honest. Like everyone is attractive. It's credible.
I give this movie a 73. I think this movie it's unfairly criticized at times. By the way, very morbid movie. Like just
they're fucked. I mean, essentially, you know, they're surviving on a micro scale, but like, you know,
people are getting fucking cleansed in the background. Like people, like the civilians are getting murdered. There's like concentration camps and all that shit. For sure, like a more morbid scenario. You're right about that.
Yeah, like I honestly forgot how morbid this shit was. Which is like that's not a slight at the movie, but I was just like, damn. I thought there were more positive twists and turns here, and there just really aren't.
Everyone dies, man.
Yeah, for the most part, everyone does. I don't know. I don't. Again, it's a product of its time, product of its era. A lot of references to that era, a lot of cliches and stuff, but I think it still works well. My biggest thing that I like about this movie is it gets right into it, and that's a very memorable part about the movie for me. Is that this movie does not beat around the fucking bush. It doesn't waste time. And I think even nowadays, that's obviously always a problem with the movies. Like, it takes a while to get going. This shit gets going almost from the jump. I mean, how much time is in between the end of the opening credits and then when the first teacher gets shot and the call and they land in the Call of Duty Battle Royale war zone?
Yeah.
I do like that scene a lot because it does. I think what this movie does do well is it does capture that dread of like in a very 80s way, like what like I think I've been conditioned to think like a video game like invasion would feel like. This is funny because Call of Duty was based off of you know, the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and like the suburb scene or whatever was you know, based off of this, and maybe this was based off of something else, but I do think this is a very video gamey feeling movie, just down to like, you know, a group of ragtag high schoolers yopping down Russian soldiers feels like a very video game thing. And that opening scene is a very video game type opening scene because you get thrown into it. Just oh, look out the window. There's people parachuting down. Oh, maybe they're really, what were they saying? They're like, they're off course.
They're really lost. Practicing.
The thing you think about is like, damn, like this must be a really widespread invasion. It's like you got like 50 dudes just dropping off in Calumet, Colorado or whatever.
Remember, Jed, no Russian as he goes to the airport. But there's a lot of parts about this that are cheesy and also bad, though. Like one of the funniest parts I noticed on this watch that I haven't ever on previous ones is when they bring in the new general to like root out all the Wolverines. He's like doing like a pep talk for all the Russians and Cubans and shit. And like they have diagrams of all the people, and then you have a diagram of an actual Wolverine and like a list of the Wolverine's strengths and weaknesses next to it. It's like, guys, you're not actually fighting real Wolverines. Did you know that?
Strengths, ferocious, weaknesses, kind of small. People don't really realize this. Like Wolverine's really
super tiny.
Yes.
Could just kick them.
Also, Charlie Sheen is so bad in this movie. His acting is horrible. Like Swayze is so good. And like I think he carries it for the most part, which like rightfully so. They like I said before, they don't try to make anyone else do too much, but he makes specifically Charlie Sheen look so bad in this movie. He looks like he's never acted before in his life.
Mm-hmm. Well, would you eat would you drink the deer blood if you were told to do it at the moment?
I'd be peer pressured into doing almost anything. I'd definitely drink the deer blood.
Oh, I'd drink anything if I was scared enough. Brain would just be on survival mode. Charlie Sheen was 19 when this came out. It's crazy to think about. And seeing C. Thomas Howell young too is kind of weird as well.
Even Powers Booth. I only ever saw him as an old man before, and like I forgot entirely that he was the pilot in this, and then I see him and I'm like, oh shit, that face is familiar. And
I loved him on Nashville. The TV show Nashville, ABC was in their bag for two seasons of that shit. It was a good show.
Was that the Who Killed Something show?
Who Killed JR?
Dallas.
Yeah, that's Dallas. No, it's Dallas. Yeah.
All right, different city name.
But the funny thing is Powers Booth played JR in Nashville, basically. It was like the Nashville version of JR.
Gotcha.
Kind of funny.
You know what scene rocked in this was when they were executing the Soviet prisoner guy? He goes, "Oh, fuck you, bastard. I'll show you how a Soviet dies." And the guy's like, "I've seen it before, pal." Robert was the coolest guy in this whole movie because he was like the badass one that was all grizzled, shooting everybody. I still enjoy this movie so much. I know it's like obviously Cold War propaganda shit and all that, but still, I find it just so enjoyable. And like,
it just doesn't bother.
Great,
right? Yeah. That just doesn't like. I'm reading some of the reviews, and they're so retroactive. Like, it's so hindsight in 2020.
Like, what are people saying? Like, I guess, like, what are some of the
political slop, political propaganda? I mean,
it's like
Republican
it is,
propaganda. It's like,
it doesn't take anything away from the movie. Like, I don't know. I think also it's looking way too deep into it. It's like, this is literally an action movie that was designed to like make money. Like, I don't think that they were doing it with like the super conscious goal of, oh, we need to, you know, influence minds and change people's ideals. Like, that was definitely not the main goal of this movie. So
that's, and they're like, let's put on our Reagan masks and go into battle. It's like, I mean, come
fucking
on.
Yeah. Right. Like,
I mean, I think, I don't know. Again, I'm not of the time, and I'm not a scholar of the 80s and whatever, like the end of the Cold War type period. But I mean, it did seem still like a lot of action movies are propaganda, right? I mean, it's base value. So, but it seemed more than anything to me than trying to capitalize on a long existing fear that has been like kind of in the back of like American culture for the last 20 years by the mid 80s. And so that's what that kind of felt like to me. I don't know.
I think retroactively, I think a lot of people tend to view anything that involves like the Cold War to be like a propaganda film. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. It's like you said, Troll, it's like the Cold War just happens to be a thing that is very fucking big and present in people's lives in that moment, and making a movie about it doesn't mean that it was done with like that sort of intention.
Well, but the other thing too is like, it's kind of why it felt more libertarian to me than anything, is because there really is no state to help them out. Right. It's like
DC was nuked, right?
Yeah. Well, or just the you know, it just felt like everything was kind of just dismantled. And so there wasn't really a government to come to anyone's aid.
Yeah. Free America or whatever. It was just more like everyone fends for themselves against a common enemy, but there definitely wasn't as much a federal presence as you might think. I agree with that, Trill.
What about making this movie again? They've done it once and it was ass. I mean, one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
Josh Peck.
I'll read the synopsis real quick. Red Dawn 2012 this synopsis.
North Koreans, I think.
Yeah, they changed it. Obviously, they changed it up. When North Korean troops invade U.S. soil and take over the city of Spokane, Washington, a recently returned Iraq war veteran, Chris Hemsworth, and a group of teens, Josh Peck and Josh Hutcherson, flee to the woods and form a band of freedom fighters, dubbing themselves the Wolverines. And they're yada, yada, yada. It's the same fucking, not the same movie. I'm sorry. That's very offensive to the actual movie. But it sucks ass. It's a bad movie.
Everything that's like charming about like Red Dawn in so many different ways is just totally lost. Like, they just turned it into like the C-level action movie with again, fucking Josh Peck. Like, you can't have Josh Peck and Josh Hutcherson in a movie, by the way.
It's the only reason I gave the movie a one. I gave the movie one because it had Josh Peck in it. Like, I thought that was maybe like a little bit of self-awareness to be like, hey, we know it's bad. It's got Josh Peck in it.
This movie fucking sucks. It was terrible. I think they could remake it, but like, I don't know if that moment, like the moment that this came out, obviously was very culturally relevant. I don't know if that moment really exists for us right now, for at least this sort of movie. So I don't know.
I think there's a lot of geopolitical tensions going on right now. And I don't think, you know, the funny thing is now when you make a movie, you want it to be successful and market overseas, right? Mm-hmm. And I think maybe the most knee-jerk position to take on having like a major scale enemy would be a cinema market that you would want to be successful in to make a movie these days. I don't know. I mean, maybe don't rely on that. I think there'll always be like, like a lot of times people want to see like a fear realized on screen as, you know, some sort of thrill seeking experience. So I feel like any sort of invasion scenario is always going to be some sort of relevant media opportunity to do that, because I think people want to see that because they're just, you know, morbidly fascinated, like how that like looks and feels on the big screen. The thing about the Red Dawn remake though, that kind of sucks, is like North Koreans aren't like a good villain.
No,
like the Russians are a phenomenal villain, especially in 80s movies, because of, you know, just the historical, you know, decades long back and forth. But like with North Koreans, I mean, I'm afraid of the Russians in the Red Dawn original. I'm not afraid of North Koreans in the remake.
No, exactly. I think that people also just like resistance movies, like stuff like that, like Partisans and all that. Like one of the, I think the best parts of the movie, The Patriot, is like when they're, you know, fighting in the show, like the montage of them ambushing like numerically superior bad guys and using, you know, tactics and familiar terrain and all that to try and beat a bigger foe. And that thing, I think that's always cool. That's like evergreen in a movie, but I just don't know, like you said, sure, like what enemy do you make it in this case? I don't know. Make it fucking aliens or something. I don't really know what works.
Yeah. I mean, I who knows? I don't think it can be made right now just because of everybody's too afraid for this sort of thing at the current moment. There's too much instability, but who knows?
So I was fighting a weird country. Like how I was fighting like Malta invaded the United States with their giant standing army.
Let's fight like Norway.
Yeah.
When have Norway invade
the Scandinavian alliance.
Why Norway? Why? And they're like, we were bored. Sorry. There's so much land here, dude. You try living up there for how many years? It's really, we need some more space. We need Six Flags Great America.
Oh God, dude.
Need Legoland. We're taking over Legoland.
Scandinavian alliance. Just all the Scandinavian countries team up against us. That's my favorite thing, is when they show like in any dystopian or future world, when they like throw together random alliances of like people like in like or different countries, and they turn them into like cool acronyms and shit. Like what was the game Future War, Tom Clancy one or something? They had a cool name for like the European groups. So I forget what it was. That game sucked though.
I love the idea, by the way, in this movie. I forgot that the father uses, like he's on his deathbed essentially in the form of a re-education camp, and he's talking to his sons, and the wife died. And he's like, he sees the light of this is the moment he can apologize for being a shit dad his whole life. Mm. He's like, this right here is why I was hard on you. Really, Dad? you envisioned this invasion of Russians?
Shout out to Harry.
He saw his out to finally be like, this was it. This is why I was an asshole.
That's an extreme 80s movie moment, though. I mean, because that is a generation.
I do like that moment. I'm just, yeah.
Yeah, but I think on the whole, like, you know, that whatever that generation that was like 20 in 1984, like I would be willing to bet their parents were a little more hard ass than you know, my or your parents growing up.
Exactly.
It is funny, but a lot of people were watching that. It's like, damn, I need to go to a payphone and call my dad and apologize to him for yelling at him for fucking just, you know, making me watch MacGyver. Mm-hmm. Just toughening me up.
We can agree too that the teacher in the beginning is one of the dumbest movie characters of all time, right?
He's just dumb. Yeah. And the way he talked so slow, it was frustrating the shit out of me. He was talking about like the Mongols or something.
Hey,
so annoying.
What are all you paratroopers with guns doing outside the school?
They start in a semicircle and then they close in. Now pay attention, guys, because weirdly and oddly, what I am teaching you right now at this very moment is cosmically intertwined to what is about to happen in the rest of this movie, okay? Mm-hmm. And it is very weird how often this happens across TV and movies, but it seems like my lesson plan has lined up very well with the situation that you are about to get yourselves into.
What if that was the final scene in the movie that they built a statue for that teacher? So yeah. Like if that wasn't the lesson plan on that day.
If he didn't teach us.
First casualty of World War III, Professor Willard. Or now I'm saying World War II. You fucked me up with that shit.
Should have gone with Carson.
Not even a professor, just some dude working at the high school. Like, I got 2 weeks till retirement, and you guys all graduate and get out of here. Oh, by the way, well, I guess they're not graduating because a football game was just played. I love that moment as like, just like, you know, people in Hollywood making a movie. It's like, hey, what are people in like small towns in America like? They like football, right? What's like the biggest mark of shame they could carry? Losing a football game? Okay, we'll go with that.
They lost the big game.
Those yokels in the country lost the big game. So that's our characterization for Patrick Swayze at the start of the movie. You lost a big game too. God damn it, I know.
That truck was so cool though, Swayze's truck.
Oh, Chevy, that blue Chevy.
Oh, it's beautiful. I want that so bad.
Speaking of losing the big game and getting shamed, I watched a movie last night, a Disney Channel original movie, tossed it on, Luck of the Irish.
Oh, boy.
Terrible movie. But there's one part in that movie where this kid is like the greatest kid of all time. He, at one point, he punches the ball from half court, and he sinks it to win a state quarterfinals game to advance on, which you think would be the greatest. It's the greatest shot in the history of basketball, including the pros in college. You think he'd be a hero for life. He then loses his luck in the semifinals, and they advance. They move on to the championship, but he was terrible. He goes to school the next day, and he is pelted with things. He's called a piece of shit, a loser. There's like, you're garbage. Like, I mean, you still won the game.
Yeah, they won.
You think that shot you made was so good? It sucked.
You suck, asshole.
Didn't mean anything. It was like UNC versus Villanova, where that guy from UNC made that fantastic shot.
Unbelievable three. One of the most insane threes ever in an NCAA game, period, not just tournaments.
Yeah, and you're watching this and you're like, wow, that is the greatest shot. They're going to be showing that clip forever and ever and ever. It means so much. Like, what an incredible buzzer beater. And then
meaningless.
With a less cool shot. Like,
way less cool shot.
Way less cool of a shot. Like, still impressive from a buzzer beater standpoint, but shot not as cool. Rendering the cool shot meaningless. It fucking sucks.
I forgot who it was for UNC, but it was a double clutch in the air three pointer. He had already jumped, double clutched, still hit the shot. Meaningless.
Unbelievable. Yeah, just rendered. That was the death of the crying Jordan meme. Because Michael Jordan was at that game in the crowds.
That's right.
And that I think was the end of when crying Jordan is really popular, because Michael Jordan's there and you can just get his reaction.
Mm-hmm. Nova Flute Girl. Was that same year?
No, that was the year before.
Yeah.
That was the year before they lost to NC State.
Nova Flute Girl would not be crying that hard when Nova won the championship.
True. Maybe she was very happy.
Someone missed a three-pointer.
Fuck. I actually watched an interesting top 10 NFL video the other day. It was greatest forgettable plays. It was like it was Larry Fitzgerald in the Super Bowl, and they lost to the Steelers, which is the greatest NFL game of all time. That's per Coley. Coley had a great tweet when the NFL put out their top 100 plays. Three plays in that game were in like the top 15 greatest plays of all time. He's like, that's the greatest game of all time. Three plays came down to a touchdown in the final minute. That's the greatest NFL game. And then it wasn't the greatest NFL game when they voted on best games.
That's crazy.
That doesn't add up logically.
Because it didn't have a team from New York in it.
Yeah. No, it was the catch game, I think, was the greatest game of all time. The game.
Oh, the Joe catch. Montana.
Yeah.
The catch was very regular. I'll say it. That was a very regular catch.
It's a moment play. There's it's hard to distinguish between a great play and a moment play. That was a moment play.
But I feel like the thing is like that just has to be the play. Like the catch implies a level of
athleticism
phenomenalness to the actual process of the catch itself.
But there was already a play.
It should have been like top 15 most important plays, like, because that's not like, it's not the most impressive catch. It's,
and also
it's
like not. rest in peace. Like, I'm not crapping on the legacy of
Dwight Clark. Yes,
Dwight Clark. Yeah,
were you picking in your head between Dwight Clark and Indianapolis Colts legend Dallas Clark there for a Dallas second? Clark.
Yes, my brain.
I saw the wheels.
Yeah, did you see me like look out?
I saw the Jim Irsay wheels spinning.
I'm not disparaging the legacy of San Francisco Giants first baseman Will Clark.
Dallas Clark is the is the base skin for a Madden tight end.
Literally, yes. Yes. Literally, that same hairline and big jaw. That's like, congrats.
What do they call that in Fortnite? What is that? It's the...
like the no skin. You're like, yeah. Your default skin, whatever.
Yeah.
Was he the last best tight end to have a number in the 40s?
Probably, yeah.
I can't think of one better right now, so I'm going to have to agree with you.
Tight ends all wear 80 now because they're... Yeah, receivers.
Well, because the 80 number is way cooler than a 40 number.
Yeah.
Yeah, that too. 40s is like a fullback number.
40s on a tight end doesn't look right. 40s on a fullback doesn't look right.
Yeah.
I know that's like what they wear, but like when I'm thinking of a tight end, I'm thinking of like a big wide, like 80, 87. 87 is a perfect tight end number.
Yes.
This is an ugly number. 87 is an ugly number.
87 and 85. I like 85 for a tight end number, believe it or not.
85 for a tight end number, too.
Something about the 80s, man.
Rest in peace, Dwight Clark.
Anything else on Red Dawn, speaking of the 80s?
It was okay. It was good. It's an 80s movie, man. It's, you know, some people love it, some people don't. What are you going to do? It was okay.
Good movie.
Yeah, you know, I'm like on the fan. I've never loved Red Dawn. I think it's just, I don't think it's that great of a movie. I think it's fun to watch, but it's just not something I can score high on.
Solid soundtrack. I love that. The tones that they play for him. Dun, yeah. Dun, dun.
It's kind of got the synth thing at the start.
Yeah.
You know, with the clouds.
Yep. That's right. Well, Red Dawn, good movie.
We're going to do later this week. I think we're going to do. I'm picking. So I was going to do Godzilla. We're going to delay Godzilla. So this coming Sunday, we're going to do Lovebirds, Kumail, and Issa Rae. That's on Netflix. Awesome new movie we can review. I think we're going to do Heavyweights this week in honor of Jerry Stiller.
I like that.
Okay. Yeah.
He would have wanted that.
I love Heavyweights. Yeah. But I haven't seen Heavyweights since
95. Ken Jack, you watched Not On Our Team movie. I would like. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Trill.
No, I loved Heavyweights, but I haven't seen it in 20 years. So it's 25 years, maybe.
I would like to do Not Another Team movie.
That would be very funny.
I know you just watched it. I would like to go through that movie. Maybe rank our top. Maybe we do top five favorite jokes each from that movie. I don't know, something like that.
Holds up very well.
Yeah, it's. I watched it recently. It is still very funny.
Considering like the genre, right? Like parody movie. Like you would have thought in that we came like what 2001 or something. You would have thought that it would have dated so bad. It just dates so well. It's great.
Well, I think it was. I mean, what they were. They're parodying movies rather than like things,
cultural things. Yeah, because other parody movies were just listing things.
But it was more like a concept. It was like the, you know, the parody of a trope of the ugly, quote unquote, ugly girl who just puts her hair down and takes her glasses off and is hot. We're parodying the trope of like other high school movie bullshits versus Meet the Spartans, which is like, remember Chris Coifer from. Leave Brittany Alone, whatever his name was. We're going to do that for Sparta. I don't know.
We're kicking Brittany off the chair.
Was it Chris Coifer?
Something
like that.
That sounds like a guy who was in
Glee.
Glee, yeah. I don't think
that was a guy who was in Glee. It was like something.
It was definitely an alliteration name that started with Chris. That much
who's the Leave Brittany Alone guy?
You're making us look this up.
It wasn't the Glee guy.
No, it wasn't Chris Coifer, but I don't know. That was the first name that popped in my head.
All right, let's do a box office game, and then we'll call this a wrap. We're going to do Charlie
Chris
Crocker.
Sheen. Chris Crocker. See, you're close.
Fucking close enough.
Charlie Sheen. Box office game, top five movies for the box office game. You guys got an extra guest today.
We do. I forgot about
this. I mean, this should be easy. I tried. Maybe it won't be.
Ken Jack's on fire on the last two. He's been knocking it out of the park.
Only in the top ones, not the bottom ones.
Yeah. Oof. Okay.
Man, Charlie he really hasn't been in a ton of movies. Shit.
So this is, I mean, this is tough. Like, he hasn't been in a lot of movies, but I mean, his major body of work. I mean, the trouble is you got like Scary Movie, right? Mm-hmm. You got Scary Movie 3, you got Scary Movie 4, and you figure the Scary Movies are going to be up there with some of the Charlie Sheen movies. So I'm going to put them on the table for right now.
I might even say that Scary Movie was in the top. Just money, pure money wise.
Yeah.
Wall Street probably.
Yeah, because you go back and some of these 80 movies, I have no idea how much they made. Like
that's the problem.
This is not a hint if it's in there, but I will say one of these in his top two of them in his top 30 say uncredited. Some and these count. Wall Street Money Never Sleeps and Madea's Witness Protection. Those are both uncredited roles. You have to include those. They are in his top 30.
When did he show up in Money Never Sleeps again? Was he getting lunch with the Shia LaBeouf's character? I forget what.
Him and Donald Trump are getting a haircut.
Oh, fuck.
Gordo. It's not the same
also,
Gordo.
Also
Gordo,
scary
I love what you do with those junk bonds.
So Scary Movie 4, Madea, and Wall Street Money Never Sleeps, he's uncredited. Those are all in the top. I'll say those are all in the top 20. I'll say that.
Okay, I'm fairly confident about Platoon, Trill.
Okay. I mean,
I say Platoon.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Platoon is number 5.
Okay.
And here we go. So remember, we're changing the game next week. We're doing IMDb. Guess what people's movies they're known for. We're gonna change it up a little bit. So you'll get it if you can go backwards 5-1. You'll get an extra one next week.
All right.
Ooh, a little incentive. Rookie. Damn, all right, you're 1-1.
I don't know. Mentally, I don't know if I can think through that.
Shit.
Madea's Witness Protection. Can we try Scary Movie? Well, thing if we want to, I don't know. I don't know if it fits in order. But I feel like Scary Movie 3 came out in 2003 and probably made some okay money.
I'll go with that, yeah. Scary Movie 3.
All right, you are out of order, but that is number 1.
Hell yeah.
I mean, if that's number 1, do you just want to keep going down the Scary Movie list?
Yeah. Let's do Scary Movie 4.
Scary Movie 4.
That's number 4.
Ooh.
Okay. What else we got?
You're guessing 5 next?
I don't think 5. I don't think, did 5 make money? I don't know. I feel like they got markedly worse like after that.
Yeah, I mean, that was 2013.
3 was the last funny one.
Yeah.
And even that was like pushing it.
I mean, it's a Scary Movie. That was 2003, 2006. I feel comfortable selecting those because those were like the 2000s. But
that's 20, the era of it.
Yeah. 7 years after the fourth one.
Yeah, the 2013. I'll table that, but I feel like – see, the thing is like – the other thing I can't figure out is you got both of the Major League movies in there, which are fantastic movies, but I can't tell you if they made money over anything in the 2000s.
I did not realize that he played our good friend Troll Weather's favorite character, Charlie B. Barkin, in All Dogs Go to Heaven. Did not know that.
He was in the 9/11 movie.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Due Date make any money?
I feel like one of the Hot Shots probably made money, but I don't know how much.
Does Due Date count?
Is Due Date on here?
Due Date would – he's in the movie, Ooh. Due Date.
Then yes, Due Date.
Due Date's number 2.
Oh fuck.
So do we just need? Fuck. We need which number do we need?
3 and 4.
Oh.
Oh no, you already did 4. So you need 3.
Yeah. 3. Oh, budge. Dang. Let's see. Going back. Did you ever see The Chase? It's not going to be in it, but he has sex in a car while driving. It's pretty cool.
Well, I think one of the Hot Shots is going to be on there.
I mean, I love the Hot Shots movie.
I think they made more money than what do you call it? Major League.
I mean, they were big, yeah, that's for sure. Okay, what about Hot Shots?
All right, you got it.
What? Damn, I honestly dude, thought I was fired. Like I thought it was gonna be one of those two, but I thought it might be a Hot Shots.
6 is Money Never Sleeps. 7 is Hot Shots Part Due. Scary Movie 5 is number 8. Ferris Bueller's Day Off is number 9. Madea's Witness Protection is 10. Three Musketeers, 11. Major League, 12. Money Talks, 13. Young Guns, 14. Wall Street, 15. And finally, Red Dawn, 16.
Did Madea die?
Last movie, apparently.
I remember when Tyler Perry was talking about her last movie. It wasn't like Madea's funeral or something. Or I didn't know if they killed Madea off.
I could see a Madea movie plot being her faking her funeral to watch it. Like faking her own death and says you can watch her funeral.
I don't know. Like, I don't know the characterization of Madea that well, so I don't know if that's something that
I watched it more than you did.
That's what I'm saying.
Tricked me.
That's why I'm leaning on you to tell me if that's something that would be in within Madea's purview to do.
That's in her wheelhouse for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I can't get over the pictures of that full-size White House replica in Tyler Perry's lot in Atlanta.
It's incredible. It's crazy. Oh, my God.
That whole production studio looks amazing.
Credit to Tyler Perry, man. Dude built an empire, like a legit empire. It's crazy.
Yeah,
And Alex Cross, pretty fucking good.
Yeah, just does the thing. He was the lawyer from Gone Girl. People forget that.
Also true.
Very good performance in that.
Very good. Yeah, he can act, and he's tall.
He's very tall. He's a tall man.
All right. Anything else?
You know who else was a tall man? Tall drink of water.
Abraham Lincoln.
No, Randy Johnson, pitcher.
Yes, he was like six eight.
He's one of my favorite baseball players of all time. Just
he's like a nature photographer now, right?
I think I remember reading that. I just love. Can you imagine just being on the mound? And I don't care who you are, but just looking, you're seeing a 6'7" skinny dude with that haircut and that mustache, just throwing that quarter arm, sidearm, 9,900 mile an hour fastball at you.
I would give up.
Yeah, Bird gave up. Bird straight exploded.
You know, like a cloud of 1,000 feathers, no less. There's no way a bird even has that many feathers.
I just say all the feathers of that bird just.
I want to see what the bird looked like after the fact. I really would have loved to see like just a good picture of that bird.
It just looks like
featherless.
It just looked like a rotisserie chicken.
cooked by the friction of the ball.
Popped out just like a little rotisserie chicken with the caps over the feet.
Yeah.
Shout out one of the cartoon. Not to gas up Jeff Bezos, but Whole Foods changed their rotisserie chicken carrying cases from the plastic containers where no matter how you pick them up, you burn the shit out of your hands. Now they have bags with handles.
Oh, smart.
Nice. Yeah.
Good job, Jeff. I'm sure you're Jeff Bezos, that is.
I'll guess up Wegmans.
In that.
Great deal when I was at Penn State as a student. Wegmans, they would do like $2.99 rotisserie chickens, which that's like that. Wegmans, everything is expensive as shit. It's a great, great grocery store. Those are always killer meals.
Yeah, the rotisserie chickens are the loss leaders because they get you in the store. You get that. Yeah. I mean, even at Whole Foods, they are. Remember, that was the big thing when Amazon bought them, was like they were keeping the chicken, or I think they actually reduced the chicken prices just to get people in there. You buy the rotisserie chicken, then you buy the $14 couscous. It all works out. Exactly. In the end.
Yeah. Oh, I love the hot.
Anyway, thanks for hyping Jeff up. Jeff B.
He needed
Jeff,
that.
Jeff Bez.
Jeff Bezos low. Jeff B. low.
Jeff, you go, are you a Bezos or a Bezos guy?
I'm a Bezos. He Bezos is too comical. Bezos is so scary.
Does sound way like a dystopian movie villain.
Yeah. Like he's like only 43 more days until the cloud plan is complete.
World's first trillionaire.
Yeah. I'm going to build Legoland too.
He's going to buy Lego. He could do that right now with, like, his personal fortune, probably.
He probably could.
Yeah, I would be willing to bet that he could buy Lego. Lego group.
He could buy a Lego, what do you call it, the Star Destroyer, the $800 one that I want really bad. And I can't do it.
Do you imagine being Jeff Bezos and just rolling into the Lego store and being like, I'll take the Star Destroyer. People are like, damn.
Everyone looks
at
you
like, that dude's rich. And bald.
Maybe be me one day.
Hey, Tina. Run back in the back and get Mr. Kling here's Star Destroyer.
Mr. Fucking just assassin.
I can say it. We basically have the same haircut right now, okay? I can say it. You can call him Mr. Kling.
All right.
Let's call it. Let's call it a day.
We're done. Middle of the week, we're doing heavyweights. We'll do something. I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
We'll do some sort of ranking, something fun. That's it.
We'll rank the minions.
Yeah.
We will.
In their native tongue.
We must
if
be.
If you know what I mean.
Banana.
Again, Jack and Trill. I'm Jeff Lowe. Talk to you later on in the week.